Good morning, everybody. And Veronica, joining in on the conversation, I hope you will participate. Bill Leff is not here today, and I would like this to be a ladies' day.
I'm all about that. Although sometimes Bill is kind of ladylike.
He's more of a lady than I am, and he will admit that. No problem. Dane Neal is on his way in, so he'll be playing the part of Bill Leff for the first half of the show. And then a friend, a WGN TV news reporter and crazy woman, Anna Balaval, will be coming in for the second half. But Veronica, all right, so the DNC last night, history was made, okay? Mm-hmm. The first female presidential nominee. Why isn't it getting all the hoopla that Barack Obama, the first African-American nominee, got?
The only thing I can think is because there's still a little bit of a black eye with the whole email thing. You know, it's like almost people are almost afraid to step out there and say something about it because there's still that hesitancy.
I know, but this is history.
I know.
In a perfect world, I would have liked someone from a different family to be the first female nominee for president of the United States of America. But this is huge news, and I feel like it's just not getting all the excitement that it should. This is a woman president. We were growing up, people said, oh, you could be president someday, and you're like, yeah, right.
Yeah, we never thought it would happen.
I never wanted it, did you?
No, because I'd have to, like, take everything out of the closet, and I just...
You mean old clothes?
But, you know, what? Think about it. If the other lady who's looking very presidential up on stage were to have stepped forward, Michelle Obama, what if she had stepped forward? I think it would be a much bigger deal.
I agree. And it's just, it's the tarnished name. Although the country was running pretty well when Bill Clinton was president. Although he looks so old to me. He has aged. And he's always so pale, so I don't know if the silver fox thing works. I would maybe do some low lights or something around his face. He just seems so pale and old.
Maybe we could get him out in the sun a little bit.
I don't know about that. I did not see all of Bill Clinton last night. How did he do?
I didn't watch it all either.
I'm already bored with the whole thing.
I've been bored. You know, because not only, you know, a lot of people just go home and watch it on the boob tube after work. We hear it all day, too.
Yeah.
So I've been burnt out for a while.
You can really just find the best parts of it on YouTube and elsewhere. Dane Neal is in the house. Hello, Dane.
In the house. In the studio. The traffic for those people out there, and I don't want to take and step on any traffic toes from the reporting side, but wow, really, really bad today.
No, it's just you, Dane.
No, it was late.
Listen, I'm late all the time, okay? But I'm late. Maybe I shouldn't say I'm late. I'm last minute. I like to arrive as we're going on the air.
When,
I really do.
When it's really needed, right? That's when you're there.
Yeah, because you get, you know, the pre-show adrenaline that kicks in, and I don't want to waste it. When I come in early and Bill's in there and we start talking about something, I say save it for the air.
That's right.
It's really kind of foolish to waste that material. And if you've listened to the show, we waste a lot of material.
No, so you're protecting the material because, you know, just you're conversational and fun person. You sit down, people are going to start talking to you, right? So this is that protective kind of broadcast bubble where you're like, you don't even get to see me until we're on.
Right. And you played it really close today.
Oh, not on purpose at all. But listening to a little bit, and I did get to watch a little bit of the convention. And
oh, good. Then talk to us because Veronica and I did not. And I know I should. I'm really done with this. I'll watch Hillary speak and then I'm done.
Bill Clinton is one of those, for those people that at least, regardless of the politics that you fall into, is one of the greatest speakers, speech givers, one of the most charismatic figures of our time.
Absolutely.
This is a guy, I got a chance to meet him once, not in a political setting. It was like the Indy 500 or something like that.
Seriously?
But, well, no, but here's the thing. People say that they...
just sounds funny to me.
These cars are fast. People say that when they meet him, it is one of those things. And there's a number of individuals out there in the world of celebrity that, like, you're like, whoa, I get it. You know, he's kind of mesmerizing. And he's one of those that has always been kind of... there's been that legend that, if he meets you once, I don't know that this is possible, but he remembers, you know, your kid's name, your birthday.
Oh, I've heard that.
How's Loretta? You know, and he knows all that stuff. So it was weird, right, to see him. And we've seen him, of course, for the last, whatever, 40 years in public life and speaking. And he gave a speech, an adequate speech, but he is so good at just kind of like making the points. And you could see he tripped up, I don't know, 4, 5, 10 times.
They all have been. Poor Al Franken, who, again, I don't think it was an appropriate thing for him to just get
to
up
come
there
out
and
as Pat,
just,
right? Which was, I thought, was one of his favorite.
Just to slam Trump. I didn't think that was necessary. And he tripped up a lot. And he's a writer. You know, Sarah Silverman, Demi Lovato, I was really pleased with coming out saying, you know, I have a mental illness and we should talk about it. And she got tripped up a couple times. This is a big night. Don't you practice and not get tripped up?
Well, you know, Bill Clinton did practice because he had so many really he had to hit on an entire career and a lifetime with Hillary in that speech. But the word that the that one of the analysts that they did as they broke down the action afterwards used that I thought really was fitting is that Bill Clinton looked diminished. He looked just that was the word.
Really?
That was the word they used, because didn't he look he didn't look as sure of himself. He looked older. He looked like a lot.
That's what I was saying. He looks older. He is so pale. His voice has always been a little quivery, but it's more so now. He just seems old to me. I don't know. Look what living with Hillary does to a man.
I don't know how much living they're doing together, but.
And that's another thing. His quote, you know, she's the best Don change maker I ever met in my entire life. I'm just surprised she never made that change when the whole Monica Lewinsky thing came up. And I know a lot of women saluted her. I kind of was shocked she didn't say, hit the road, Bill.
You know, I think that they have what would be considered and. It's weird, right? Because you see a lot of that, you know, playing on the family side, and they're showing Chelsea up there and the grandparents, and so they can come together, I think, in that. But it's always been kind of like a bit. I mean, I gotta think there's some love in there somewhere.
Well, there's love and admiration,
but it's been kind of maybe like a business for them. You know, like they're yeah. really good together, successfully on the career side. You know,
kind of like me and Bill.
Well,
you know,
is there like a love child out there that we don't know about? No. Okay.
No, because that's what I feel, you know, had they not already had Chelsea, I don't know that they'd be having a kid now, you know,
they could have.
And she seems very well adjusted.
She seems very nice. She's got kids. You got the grandparent thing. Right. They could have just adopted, you know, a 14-year-old Laotian boy, you know, to help out with, you know, around the house or whatever. But yeah, they've been successful. There's that whole stand by your man. But if you look at Hillary and what a strong, I think, personality she is, it seems so counter
yes.
character, right? She's not one of those, what would I do without him? We all have problems. He provides. It's not that. I mean,
no
Hillary's
way.
A strong person. Yeah, I don't know either. There's got to be a reason.
Well, people have said for her in order to advance her political career, but I don't know how that helped her by staying with him. Because he's so charismatic and people dig him that all of a sudden they're like, all right, I'll vote for the old lady.
This is one of the very few situations that you could see it. Now we're going to see it reversed, right? Because he's going to be the first man, you know, the first dude, you know, in the White House. And he's such a powerful force himself.
What a perfect person to be the first dude.
That is going to be some, I mean, on the media side, there's going to be some entertaining because he's going to be, what is he, you know, clipping ribbons at new hospitals. I mean, what does the vice president
they're
do?
They're worried about that idle time, though, because that gets him in trouble.
He's going to be right. He'll be coming in late, throwing the keys on the counter. I'm home. You know, he's got nothing else to do. But for those two, and like I said, we'll see it reverse now. Why did Hillary stay? Well, you know, at that point, now we're seeing the first woman ever nominated, you know, by a party.
Which no one's excited about. I want more excitement. This is history.
When they started, that was, you know, so far into the future. But she is every bit, I believe, she's every bit a part of a lot of the decisions that were made. And I think that she's every bit as smart as Bill is. Hillary is a very, like her or not, you know, she's a very smart person. And I think that was the way for her to affect change, because she couldn't be governor of Arkansas. She couldn't be president of the United States then. But, you know, she was in, they said, 2-for-1. She was developing education policy and healthcare policy just as a first lady, as opposed to Michelle Obama and Laura Bush have been very popular. But they do more of the social things, like let's get kids to eat and exercise and don't do drugs, you know, where Hillary was more kind of in the nuts and bolts of things.
All right. We have some listeners that want to jump in on this. Bill Clinton, he appeared old to me. And
I thought so. As someone who is a fan of his ability to really deliver a speech, you know, again, everybody, you know, we're all going to get old and get worse at things, I'm guessing. So it's natural. But he was so good so that when he takes a step back, you really notice it.
Absolutely. And he still is charismatic. And if someone could explain that to me, I would like it as well. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder here. Dane Neal's in for Bill Left today, 720 WGN. Bill Left's off for a couple of days. He's taking an extended weekend. Very extended weekend. So Dane Neal is in his place today for the morning show. And then for the rest of the afternoon, we'll have Anna Balaval.
I got to practice. It's all one word.
Yeah. I have to practice how to say it. Bill was telling me how to say it. Kevin, do we have the lessons? Oh, okay. But he was teaching me how to say Anna Balaval, and I don't do it as well as he does, but
when
later
you,
on.
When you look at an imprint, are there any exotic punctuation marks in there? That
no umlauts, no accents, no nothing.
No tildes.
Just Anna, yes. All right, Rhonda, talk to us about Bill Clinton and his speech last night. You noticed something.
Hello, can you hear me okay? I'm in the car.
Yes, I'm in the studio.
So, I noticed something. Every time that palm and the fist and the hand was up in the air and the finger was shaking, he had little tremors on both hands. Now, it doesn't always mean something, but he had some tremors. Did anybody else notice that?
I didn't see it last night, and I have just seen like still photos of it, but I have noticed him being on talk shows and stuff in the past where I thought I noticed that.
Okay, because he looked healthy. I mean, he's thin ever since he went vegan and had heart attacks, but he looked...
That's the diet he's on. Go vegan and have a couple of heart attacks.
Not in that order, maybe.
No. Right.
Yeah, I hope it wasn't in that order. I hope it was the other way around.
Well, Rhonda, we'll look...
good.
We'll look into that, but I didn't see it last night. But
I did notice it, yeah.
Thank you very much for pointing that out.
And he's a guy that's got these signature, and you wonder how much of it is just natural as it always appeared and how much of it is just part of his speech-giving persona where he was, you know, he does like the, you know, he's got the finger up and he's like pointing, now this, I'm just thinking of this. This just came to mind. And then he's got his biting the lip thing.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Where he's like, yeah, I'm in a tender moment.
Dude, that is so orchestrated. In the middle of his speech, it'll say in parentheses, bite lip here.
Right. Okay. I'm really feeling
for effect.
But I did notice, yes, his hands were shaking a little bit.
All right, and Jan wants to jump in. Hey, Jan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Bill gave a great speech, but the man had quadruple bypass, and he does have a heart condition. I mean, he almost died. Y'all got to give him a little bit of slack here. He is a great orator, though.
Absolutely.
And it was like he has had a heart condition. And yes, he might have a little shake now and then, but he can do so much for this country still. And you should be happy that Hillary could be elected. Yes, we are happy. A lot of us women are happy.
Well, I'm not seeing as big of a hoopla as I think we should. This is the first woman presidential candidate.
Maybe you in the press are not seeing it, but honey, where I'm coming from, as a woman working in the field that's doing a man's job, have been for years, we all are ecstatic. And we all are just beating the drum. And yes, we'll bake cookies for Hillary. We will do whatever we can.
Well, Jan, I wanted to note and mention, too, is no, the speech was really good. It was really good, and I think it was a really nice way to take what is, you know, such a long relationship and such a long career and an endorsement from a former president and build it into one kind of seamless conversation. The thing is, and the only reason anyone's even talking about it is he has been so amazingly good that whenever you see any kind of chinks in the speech giving armor, you notice it because he has been so good. But it was a great speech.
Yeah, well, he's not getting any younger like the rest of us.
I know. I'm getting younger, Jan. All of a sudden, I'm going to start going backwards in my birthdays, and I hope you can, too.
Okay, very good.
Girls rule.
That's right. Keep the faith.
Thank you. I just, you know, this is a historic moment, and I got my little AP alert saying, you know, Hillary Clinton, the first woman nominated for a president. I want more celebration.
So Wendy, why do you think that it's been sort of anticlimactic? Is it because, you know, 8 years ago we all became accustomed to the idea that this could happen and of course it didn't, you know, or that she has been so much a part of the public consciousness for so many years that you don't really think of her as just Hillary the woman. You think she's just such a known commodity.
Right.
You just think of her as Hillary. I mean, is all of that part of it? That it's just been something that you have known could happen, even though it didn't. And then she's just so familiar. She didn't come out of nowhere.
See,
right?
That's, you know? I think you've hit the nail on the head there. The painted fingernail. I think you have hit that, because if it was, you know, Barack Obama comes out of nowhere, first African-American president, that was, oh my God, this is amazing. The world is changing. And then first female presidential nominee, oh, it's Hillary. She's been around for a while. If it was a fresh new face, I think it would be more exciting. And that's not fair to her.
I think part of it is that vicariously we all in those situations kind of live through those moments. So when Barack Obama came basically out of nowhere, people said, like, the thought process is that, hey, that could happen to me, or right, that could happen to this girl or that. And Hillary's just been such a known person, and not even from maybe a political person or a celebrity where she was, you know, a senator. She was kind of like there in the White House as much as possible, but she was sort of like a co-president. You know, that's, yeah, what they even described themselves.
Madam Secretary.
Yeah, so it's just a little anticlimactic, but hopefully things will ramp up, I guess, as far as the excitement. People should be excited about it.
I do like the madam thing. You know, Mr. President and Madam Secretary, Madam President. I want to be Madam Radio Host.
Well, let's do it.
All right.
After the break, Madam Radio Host is done.
Thank you, Dane Neal. I was waiting for the drums to kick in. I'm sorry. I like to let the music establish. You can tell Bill's not here because he jumps in right away. He is eager to jump in, and he's off for the next few days. So
we're going to do it at your pace, Madam Radio Host.
Thank you very much. Dane Neal is sitting in for Bill this morning, and then we have Anna Balaval, who will be coming in later on this afternoon, and kind of a revolving door of guest co-hosts for me all week. So thank you for getting the ball rolling here. Do you remember, how many years have you been married, Dane?
10. It'll be 11 coming up next month.
Congratulations.
On remembering.
We got married in 97, so we're going on 19. Is that,
wow,
right?
Congratulate. Well, that's good. You know, it's one, everybody, it's so cliched. Everyone just says, hey, time flies, and kids grow up so fast, and, you know, all these little things that people say. But it is absolutely the truth. You look around and you're like, wow, has it been that long? I think that's probably a testament to some good times, right? That you're not thinking, geez, you know, another month.
God, right? I hope not.
To where, like, you know, things are trucking along and things are good, and you're enjoying each other, and you get,
but there
to
are bad times too, and that's, yep, just all part of a commitment. I bring this up, you know, because I didn't feel like it mattered. Like, my marriage wasn't vindicated until I hit double digits. So you're going to be 10 years?
It's already 10.
Okay, so yep. Didn't it feel different when you hit that double digit?
Yes. Right. Yeah. I mean,
all of a sudden it's like, I think, like, we're going to make it.
Right. Right. We're too old to, like, find other people, you know, or whatever.
That's
it is.
Not the reason.
Well, no, I don't mean it like that. I just mean, like, hey, this is going to stick.
Maybe,
right?
You are.
No.
It has more significance when you hit, yeah, a double digit.
Yeah. Now, do you find, now that you've gotten, of course, you're getting close to 20 years where.
And Bill's already 25.
Wow.
Not years old, but being married.
Right. Maybe in his activities, right, and his hobbies and his likes. Where you hear those stories of the older couple that, like, we've been married like 58 years, to where you do think to yourself, you see it differently. Where before you were like, wow, okay, great. And now you're like, wow, that is pretty impressive.
That's an accomplishment to live with someone for that long. I know I'm not easy to live with. And, you know, you have your visions of sitting on a rocking chair when you're older. But, I mean, usually by the time you have time to sit on the rocking chair, you're already in a nursing home.
Assisted living. That's what
All
they
right.
call it.
Yeah, I guess that's what they call it.
Here's, I think, one of the things that are kind of indicators of success, and you couldn't have told me that it would be the case. You could not have told me or convinced me that this would be possible. But as time goes on and everybody changes, I'm still, she's the same person. You know what I mean? Where you're still just as attracted. You're still just, you know, all that kind of stuff. You're just
more tired.
Well, yeah, right.
Because kids do that to you.
But it's good. It's all good. So that's good. And congratulations.
Well, thank you. You,
yeah,
as well. Our little Kevin, the producer, Kevin Richter, will be marrying his lovely fiance, Sierra, in September. Mm-hmm. And I found something on BuzzFeed, Kevin, and perhaps you can chime in and help us out. The perfect wedding gift for you.
Just right. Money, right?
Or yes.
Best Buy gift card?
No, not even. Just money.
See,
is that terrible of me to say?
Yes. No, it isn't.
Okay, no.
Can I say, seriously, it is not. I always like to get some kind of meaningful wedding gift. And I just, like, if I look at, I don't want to give examples because I may end up buying it for you. So I don't want to say it because if I see you rolling your eyes, I'll be like, oh, crap, what if I order it?
See, the Bill would be thinking of, like, the full set of the unopened Magic the Gathering action figures.
Well, it's funny you say
for the
that.
Mantle.
See,
the mantle.
I would love that. Sarah, maybe not.
But that is something, when Jim and I got married and registered for stuff, we registered, what was 97? Was that Super NES, are we thinking?
Yeah, yeah,
Super
I think
Nintendo?
So. I think that, yeah.
I think we registered for that.
Might have been like a PlayStation 1.
No, we're not PlayStation. It was some Nintendo thing. I could have sworn it was Nintendo. I don't know.
It was probably the Super Nintendo.
Whatever. It was Super Nintendo. Yeah.
Whatever the cool game system at the time.
But so Jim kind of jokingly, you know, when we were registering for things, he said, you know, wouldn't it be fun and we both like to play video games? So I said, yeah, put it down. No one's going to get it. He worked for, with Jonathan Brandmeier at the time, and the whole Brandmeier office gave us the Super Nintendo, so we played like crazy and loved it. So it's funny you mentioned Magic the Gathering. Sarah's not into it, but I found something that I want to talk to you about. Every solid relationship is or should be based on fun and a little playful competition. So how about these fantastic board games that are done up in special woods and, like, for instance, a marble chess set? Would that be a good idea? Like, no one...
Well, here's the thing
about chess. You're not going to get two of them.
I know. I would like to have a nice chess set, but the thing is, I don't know how to play chess, and Sarah does, and I don't think I could take losing to her repeatedly while I'm learning how to play. So.
But see, that's something they could do together. She could teach you how to play chess, and, not and chess.
What? It's not either or, it's and. But Kevin, think about this. What better gift could you give to your bride than here's this envelope? You know, we get the chess set. She knows that you don't necessarily know how to play. But you hand her this envelope with your completion certificate in the online chess correspondence course. And so,
oh, that would be cute.
So like, and you're ready to go, right? That you've secretly, you know, well, learned
yeah,
this skill.
I do like that. That way, I don't have to keep. I'm very competitive. I don't want to lose to her at all.
You could play strip chess, and every time you lose a piece, you lose a piece of clothing.
Dress and
she
layers.
She would love to teach you.
That's an interesting concept, I guess.
Has anyone ever come up with that? You're like, back through the ages.
I wish I did.
Strip chess.
Would have made my, you know, checkmate a little more exciting.
Wait a minute. Look.
Let's take a quick break. I have some other ideas. Because really, I'm telling you, I love a good board game. I just don't have a lot of free time to play anymore. But I think that's kind of an interesting gift to register for. And if listeners have ideas, Super Nintendo, we got it. It was awesome.
And if you can have some of those, you know, traditional kind of iconic board games, you know, like Monopoly or something, but do it either in a way that I get, because they wear out, you know. So if you
I
can...
have a couple ideas coming.
Cool.
All right. It's Dane Neal in for Bill Leff. It's me, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Maybe you should get a new turntable for a wedding gift, Kevin.
Mine's pretty new.
Do you have a turntable?
Yeah.
See? Dane, do you?
No.
A working one?
Yeah, no. Now that I think about it, I don't think so. I don't think so. You need that. Isn't that crazy? All of these things that we all had probably in quantity, and now you've got to go back and try to get them again.
You can get them at Goodwill. They're selling them at, like, Urban Outfitters. You can get a record player anywhere. But it's funny to just see history repeat. My son Michael has a record player.
Think the 8-track will ever come back?
Never.
No.
All right, Kevin's getting married in September, and BuzzFeed has put together classy board games that would make great wedding gifts. This, I think, is really, really, really cute. Do you remember the Connect Four game, was it?
Sure.
Well, they this is one that's probably on Etsy, but it has their names, like... You could put Kevin and Sarah and then little hearts, and you could play the game of Connect Four, but it's little hearts. Isn't that cute?
Yeah, and if you're looking at
That's kind of sappy. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, I like that one better because I think my odds of beating her are much higher on that one.
All right.
And it could be kind of part of a game room or furniture or a den. You know, and it looks better than just a kind of a beat-up cardboard box, which is where your Connect Four would normally reside. But what games are... Maybe 312-981-7200. What games are worthy of kind of an elevated presents being made of wood, you know, like Boggle.
But, you know. Well, I was going to say chess was a good one because you see some chess sets sometimes that are actually really beautiful and like they're works of art, you know?
This is a pretty simple one.
And it's $99. You can get it from CB2, which is Crate and Barrel 2. And it's really pretty. Plus, if you come to somebody's house and they have a chess set out, don't you think, wow, these people are smart?
So you're thinking just as kind of an intelligence prop? Like you just bring, having some over, we want to impress them. Bring out the chess set.
I'll put it over with like the Odyssey and have other things over there like that. My globe will look real classy.
Like really difficult crossword puzzles, like half filled
right,
out.
Yeah.
Oh, those old
Sudoku.
Things.
But, you know, it does look, if I see a chess set, you know, when you walk into someone's house for the first time, what's the question that follows it? Oh, do you play chess? Let's do a game.
You'll sit down and spend a few hours.
What about Monopoly? There's originally...
No. Takes way too long.
I'm with you.
Too long.
Trivial Pursuit? A richly appointed version of Trivial Pursuit?
No, because I think that it's pop culture, and I think the questions either... Unless there was some that are so specific, you know, like constitutional law, you know, or something that just doesn't change, or the history of... The War of 1812, you know, something that's not going to change. Because if they're about, you know, TV shows and they've just got Frasier questions on now, like not everybody remembers that.
All right. A set of silverback dominoes.
That could be cool.
Except, can I just say, does anyone know how to play dominoes? Because all I've ever done with
them is set them
up and then you knock them down.
You have to like match the numbers or something like that. And then it makes shapes.
Not the keywords, something like that.
Yeah.
I'd figure it out. Or I would just do the dominoes and make cool little obstacles.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
God, what's the last time I did that? I think we should do that in the studio.
Let's cancel the show for today.
A marble tic-tac-toe set.
Marvel tic tac toe?
Marble.
Marble.
Oh, marble one would be great.
Deadpool.
See, some of these are just...
Well, see, those would look nice. I think the dominoes, the tic-tac-toe, it's, you know, it's iconic. Everybody knows that. But how much time do you spend playing? Because I think that's where chess is so different than, you know, like checkers or dominoes or tic-tac-toe is because it's one of those games, we talked about it a little bit off the air, that you can learn as a kid and understand how to play and the rules, so you can enjoy it as a kid. But then you can play it, and to be really good at it, it is a game you can play and enjoy your whole life. Plus, it is one of those things, it's such a historical legacy, too. I mean, it's a game that's was played by, you know, kings hundreds or maybe 1,000 years. I don't even know, but it's...
Well, there were actually people standing there at the beginning, weren't there? Like knights.
You over there in the t-shirt, move up.
No, there was a bishop in a robe and a king and a queen.
Really?
I think they started with real people.
That's what you do. When you're the king, you just make the people do
it. I want that, then.
That would be way too expensive, and shipping would be outrageous.
Maybe we can do that at the wedding.
They do. They have those games, though. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, in bars where you stand there and play chess, like with a team.
I don't know. There's
a giant chessboard, and you have people stand.
Yeah.
Do that at the wedding instead of the hokey pokey.
Instead of dancing, yeah, that'd be good. People will stick around for that. Maybe.
All right, everybody, you have a card on your table. This will say which piece you are. You know, I'm a bishop. I'm a rook. I get. You could do it.
What about a nice, beautiful, sleek, polished Jenga?
If it were bigger, yeah, I could be into that.
What are you, Paul Bunyan?
They have, like, at bars, like the big ones, you know, and that's pretty fun. But I don't think my neighbors would appreciate that.
How big is it?
They can get, like, I don't know, maybe 3-4 feet high.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Kevin, he wants a full-size human chess set, number one. And then he wants the giant skyscraper Jenga.
Yes. Yeah, made out of railroad ties in the backyard. That's going to be hard to play, and no one will come to your parties.
Yeah, yeah.
Aunt so-and-so was crushed by the Jenga.
All right, well, I don't know, just some ideas on BuzzFeed. I'm going to be thinking of a few because I always want to give that special gift, but what is that special gift in your opinion?
Special gift? Money. It's not that special, but it is special.
But for you guys, you know, starting out, you know, you're young, don't you need things like toasters and, you know, like a china set or something?
And we have a registry that's got some of that stuff on there.
You have a toaster, don't you?
Yeah, but why not a cooler
toaster? Not a really good one.
You're right. We do have like a microwave on there and things like that. You know, your basics.
But, yeah, but you've been living in sin, so I mean...
Living in sin?
Well, not married. I know, I lived in sin too. It's right near Stone Park, as Bill pointed out. Sin, Illinois. You have most of that stuff, but I know there's something about wanting it fresh and wanting it new.
Well, and you may, you know, as a young couple, you may have functionally those items, you know, they're identified and described. It's a toaster, but it, let's say you get like a vitamin, you get things that you would never afford. You can get all in like one big thing. You get
a Vitamix.
Vitamix, yeah. Or you get like a really nice, you know, like Cuisinart all clad thing. Like pot and pans, the kind of thing that you just, this is like your one chance in time to ask all of your relatives that have way more more money than you for all the things that you'd never buy for yourself.
Think about how greedy that is when it comes down to it. That's why I think money is the perfect gift as well, because then do what you want with it. And it's just, you know, you don't know how much to give anymore, because when back in the old days, like 20 years ago, I used to go to a wedding. It was like roughly $50 a person. So if you went as a couple, you'd give $100.
You want to for sure cover your meal.
The cost
or whatever.
Of the meal. Yeah, that's what they say. But now it's like really expensive to go to a wedding. So I think I'm busy on your wedding date, Kevin.
You could Skype in. Imagine Wendy in front of a roaring fire. I would like to be there tonight, but unfortunately I'm here doing this other thing.
My fireside chat. Right, right. My fireside toast. That's what I could do.
Let's all raise a glass.
But money you got to think of, because it's not just, you know, covering the cost of your plates.
Yeah. That's what it's coming down to.
And you guys have done some kind of cool travel, right? Do you have something that you're thinking of as far as a honeymooner travel? Maybe people could kick in towards that. Maybe even buy some experiences. Like, hey, we want to go see this whatever waterfall.
Yeah, so that's a cool idea. Yeah, I mean, we're doing Bali and Tokyo for our honeymoon. So
nice.
It's,
oh, look at that.
We're going all over the world.
Are you secretly a millionaire that I am unaware
no.
of?
He's got a bat cave.
Bali, it's like the flight, I'll just full disclosure, was about the same as flying to Turkey last year. Actually, a little cheaper.
Again, are you hearing him flying to Turkey last
but
year?
But same thing, like, okay, we were able to stay at her dad's place and her family's place in Turkey, so we were okay. It was, you know, you save money where you can.
Do they have like a hut over the ocean in Bali, too, that you'll be staying at?
No, but they say it's when you're out there, it's really cheap, like cost of living and all that. So we'll see. I'll report back.
And, you know, that is kudos to you for doing all this traveling before you got married, because, seriously, I didn't, and now, like...
We can't even go out to eat.
I know.
You know, easily. It's different.
It is different, so you're right.
Yeah, I mean, we're not living extreme while we're in Chicago, but why not have a little fun and travel the world a bit?
And that's what you try to figure out, is what's more important to you. To me, it's a big hassle to travel. If I could just teleport myself there on a beach and then come back to work by 10 o'clock in the morning, I'd be a happy girl.
So Kevin, ask for a teleporter.
Teleporter, so we don't have to fly 30 hours.
We can borrow it.
Now you're talking. All right, we have to take a quick break, and I will tell you who is coming in after the news this morning. Dr. John Duffy is here. He is a psychologist, a clinical psychologist. He's a life coach. He is an author, a book called The Available Parent, and he will be coming in after the news. There are a lot of people who always have questions for him, so 312-981-7200. You can text him in now or call when we speak to him. News is next, 720 WGN. Coldplay was just in town. We recorded it. Coldplay?
Wasn't it during one of the big lightning storms?
Yeah. Kevin, why are you looking at me so strangely?
I think that was a remix, but yes, that was Coldplay.
Oh.
Coldplay did some remixes while they were in town.
Well, we're speaking of music today with Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert, proud husband and father, and the Available Parent is a great book to read. Hi, John.
Hi.
Oh, it would help if I turned your microphone on.
That'd be
on.
Nice.
See, Bill goes away and all hell goes.
No.
Everything goes crazy. So Coldplay was just in town at Soldier Field.
Yes.
And Pitchfork was in town, and I took my son Michael to see Brian Wilson.
Right? Man, how cool.
I got to tell you, there was a beautiful moment. He's 17 years old, and I said, oh, I got tickets to go take you to see Brian Wilson. And he goes, okay, well, I'm going to go with a friend of mine. I said, well, I kind of got him through work, so you kind of got to go with me. Oh, okay, well, that's fine. And I said, are you sure you're cool with it? He goes, absolutely. It's just, you know, when push came to shove, he wasn't going to go with a friend because that would require arranging things, who's going to drive. So we went there. We had a great time. I had purchased this Help Me Rhonda shirt from Etsy that Brian Wilson wore on an album cover. And there was a picture of Brian Wilson wearing this. So Michael's like, I have to have this shirt. So we're standing around in a crowd of people. There were some 20-year-olds next to us who were singing every word as Brian did Pet Sounds. There were mainly older people, my age and older. And at the end of doing Pet Sounds, Brian Wilson played Help Me Rhonda, and everyone that we were standing around turned around, looked at Michael, pointed at his shirt, and high-fived him.
Wow.
I got goosebumps. I know that's like, it sounds ridiculous, but to me, that music brings people together.
This is the indelible stuff that we ignore in families a lot of the times. So this is how we build resilience, is by having a good time together. And nothing's better than music, right? Nothing's better than sharing music. There's a family I worked with about 8 or 9 years ago. Father and his 17-year-old son can't get along for anything. And at some point, they argue about music more than anything else. And at some point, the dad has this brainstorm, not my idea, dad's, that, okay, I'll go to one of your concerts, but then you're coming to one of mine. And these guys, for the last decade or so, have been trading concerts back. So this dad has seen Kanye and Chance the Rapper, and this kid has seen Fleetwood Mac and Springsteen, and they debate it, and it's like, it's their connection. It's their thing. They still argue like crazy about almost everything.
But it's brought them together.
Yeah, it's their connection.
Well, music is one of those things that kind of transcends so many different, whether it's art or food or, you know, and music is definitely in there. I think this is maybe the first generation where music isn't a divisive thing in a lot of ways with the youth, because it used to be like, oh, those crazy kids and their loud music. Now you're looking at bands, and this had not happened before, that were part of that cool rock and roll generation, you know, or the Beach Boys, just making music that is undeniably awesome,
right,
and perpetual. So you, that's where you see like a Paul McCartney at, I don't know, 80, right, playing with the Rolling Stones.
He's not 80 yet.
Almost.
Mick is, what, 73 and going to be a father again for the 8th time.
But that music is still, and those concerts still, I mean, and so that's where you can get these generations where you have crowds with kids that are in their teens, you know, and people that are up there and enjoyed them the first time around.
Right, right. And so you get kids at Lollapalooza last year who are seeing, you know, 22-year-old kids in bands, and then they'll walk over and look at, you know, 75-year-old Paul McCartney.
They looked at him.
Yeah, they'll at least look at him, yes, and they'll say, I saw a Beatle one day.
And see, something, and, you know, maybe I'm just tooting my own horn as being a cool parent, but I think, you know, I'm 50-ish, and people our age, we went to those concerts. We went to see Springsteen.
Yeah.
We went to see Blondie and Pretenders. So we like to rock. So when we take our kids to a concert, you're right, there's no, it's no divisiveness. Because our parents, yeah, oh, I loved listening to Elvis records, or Rosemary Clooney was very special. But, you know, we actually are still going to concerts. We went as a whole family to see Van Halen because my son Dylan is starting to drum. Thought that's a great drummer to show him how. And, you know, no one was like rolling eyes at us. We got high-fived because people said, oh my God, look at this family's here together.
And I actually think, honestly, your family is a really good model for this, because not only, if I understand the Snyder McInerney family well, you guys not only listen to music together, but you'll play music together and you'll sing music together. And that even more so makes you more resilient and more connected. You've got something to kind of fall back on if something goes wrong, you know?
That's totally true.
Yeah.
Music brings people together. Lollapalooza, yesterday we had Dr. Nina Fieri in, I think that was her name. I just know she was a pediatrician and works in the ER at Lurie Children's Hospital. And they were doing drunk drills,
mm-hmm,
because there are kids going to Lollapalooza every time there's an event. Pitchfork, honestly, was mostly older people.
Right.
But this was the first time I've been to a concert where I had to open my purse. They would pull out items of my purse, like my makeup bag, and they'd say, here, open this in front of me. Here's your wallet. Open it in front of me. Because kids are sneaking things in and linings of their purse or backpacks.
Or underwear or other places.
And they don't, yes, pat you down. That's
right,
true.
Right. And so, you know, I think we have to be particularly vigilant as parents, because for a lot of us, this is our kids' first concert experience. And it's not like you go to something that's 2 hours long or 3 hours long. This is a 4-day extravaganza. And so you have to talk to them a little bit about, you know, what you're going to witness and what you need to be careful of. And we can't have our heads in the sand about that.
Can we continue on that? We're going to take a quick break. And what, as a parent, can you talk to your kids about to prepare them for Lollapalooza? 312-981-7200. Bill Leff is off for the rest of the week, enjoying some time off. Dane Neal in his place. Dr. John Duffy with us. I'm Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Lollapalooza is going on this weekend, an extra day of the madness, because what anniversary is it?
25th.
Might be 25, yeah.
Don't you know these things, Dane? I count on you.
Well, they've kind of had starts and stops. You know, they've had some where it was around and then it was gone for like 5 years and then it became a residency here. And I've got a hat from 2 years ago. It says 10 years. I know it's longer than that. So I'm not sure how they're keeping track.
All right. Well, an extra day. It's the 20th, I guess. It's an extra day of 25th. Kevin, you can just say it on the air or keep confusing me.
30th. No, I'm just kidding. It's 25th.
You are fired. All right. Anyway, so kids are going to Lollapalooza. Dr. John Duffy is with us today. And I think my kids haven't gone by themselves unescorted and they haven't asked yet. But when that day comes, what do I do?
You know, it's a tricky thing because every year this time I get a bunch of referrals. And sometimes this is the primary thing parents want to talk about is, do I let my kid do this? I feel like it's risky. I feel like it's dangerous. And my bias is usually, it's a little bit of a rite of passage here in Chicago. So my bias is usually like, oh yeah, let your kid go, but really be clear with them about what the risks are and what they're going to see so that they're not shocked, because I think there are some shocking sights of people who are on drugs. And
I'm shocked when I see it, and I've seen it several times in my life.
Yeah,
you know, so not personally, but you see it around. It's scary.
And you know, sometimes kids don't think all this stuff through, and they think everybody's got good intentions. So you have to tell your kid, don't take anything that's handed to you. Don't take anything that's open. You know, there are certain rules that these days you really need your kids to follow so that they can really just enjoy the time.
As a parent, I know that coming up to Lollapalooza, it's impossible to probably do this before it gets to this weekend. But for those people that may be thinking into the future, maybe some kind of primer, because you're right. It is a rite of passage. They're going to come. Their friends are going
to
go. It's going
to
be
scared to go to it.
It's going
to
be a band. It's going to be a band they care about. And you want them to do it in small bites, because the scary thing about Lollapalooza, and my summer job growing up, end of high school, college, was, you know, I worked at Alpine Valley Music Theater. And so we had festival, you know, the days of Grateful Dead's. I've worked like the Who tours and the Motley Crue and every single thing that would come through. And you would see just different versions of a lot of the same stuff that would be concerning, you know, now as a parent. But
sure.
Lollapalooza, and you're right, we talked about it off the air, it is all day and all night. It is usually really, really hot. And so it's not, you know, a 2 hour window, you know, where you're watching, you know, Bon Jovi open up for the Scorpions.
Right.
This is a commitment.
This is all day. And so you can make more and more bad decisions and then have all those environmental factors kind of kick in.
Absolutely. You know, I sometimes think that the best bet is if you've got a 15, 16, 17 year old, this is their first concert, not to buy a 4 day pass, but to buy a 1 or 2 day pass and let them kind of ease their way into it. Or to your point, Dane, I think is, you know, if you're thinking ahead to Lollapalooza, you know, 2 years from now, bring your kids to concerts now. Get them used to the environment. Get them used to seeing a show and, you know, what's appropriate and what's not, and behaviorally and otherwise.
Well, you mentioned the environment, and Lollapalooza is also a unique situation just because of the extended period of the time, the practical nakedness, all the different bands and so many other things. I thought that since I'd grown up doing this, been to concerts, you know, a rock and roll fan forever, this was kind of my element, right? But I think I've gotten like soft, you know, because a couple of years ago, we got like through one of the distributors, we got to one of the VIP passes. So we're getting to watch, you know, Eminem from a riser while we enjoy, you know, craft cocktails. It was different. And so when we wanted to walk through to go see something else, and so the security guys let us out. It was kind of like a zombie apocalypse movie because they had people guarding the gates. They opened the, all right, they're going out. And then it was like, you know, everyone was naked and jumping and falling into each other. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not sure I'm still built for this. And so
it is. And Lala for sure is the rite of passage. It is a young person's concert because like Alpine Valley, you need a ride out there if you don't drive. And that's really far. Some of the other venues are far. This, you can take a train in. You can have parents drop you off.
And culturally for kids, it means so much to them, right? There's this opportunity to see like all these bands you've been talking about all year. So that, you know, I am reluctant to take that away from kids just because it's this massive rite of passage and they talk about it all year long.
So many different bands are playing at the same time. Is this a possible suggestion? And Wendy brought up a connection going to a concert where you can find a couple bands, because it really spans like the whole musical landscape from the hottest thing that's right now to like legendary acts,
right?
Is maybe maybe go yourself, you know, but don't necessarily like hang out with them the whole time, but say like, hey, you're going to go check out this band. I'll be over here. So at least you'll be on site. I mean, is that maybe a smart thing?
So a little insider information. I know a lot of teenagers, and out loud, they would say the last thing I want is my mom or dad there. But really, they don't mind the safety of that. You know what I mean? As long as you're not hovering and helicoptering right. over them,
yep.
the idea that you are somewhere here, in whatever, the giant right. park, yes, we can meet back here if I
That's
feel unsafe
a
for a moment. It's really a sound idea. I like it a lot.
All right. Already we have a judgy text, and I have to bring this up because this is how people are these days. What parent would allow their kids to go to Lollapalooza? The ones who don't know their kids are out at 2 in the morning. First of all, I can't go to sleep till my kid's home.
Right.
And so I know he hasn't been out till 2 yet, but I mean, I would know.
Right.
Don't most parents kind of wait for their kids to come home before they can lock the front door and turn off the porch light?
I think most of us, if we're being honest, we're usually up when our kids get home.
Not sitting there, you know,
right.
with an Afghan on, staring at the door and tapping your foot on the ground. But you're not in a deep sleep until you know all your birdies are in the nest.
It's an instinct, right?
Yep.
It's something. And to the judgy point, and not to judge back, but eventually our kids get exposed to just about everything. And you want to be there for some of the initial exposure, right? So this is an opportunity to be there at the end of the night when they come home. How was it? What was it like? What did you see? Anything really weird happen? And, you know, when they're off to college, you don't have that opportunity. So right. here's this opportunity to, like, talk to them about it and process all of it with them instead of waiting for them to, some kids, hit the wall when they get to college if they've never experienced anything before that.
With Michael is going to be a senior this year. We're thinking about college, and already I'm, you know, tugging back at the strings going, oh, maybe junior college is what you need, because I don't want to let go. He's ready to fly.
Sure.
But I wonder if in this day of texting and everyone having a phone, if the transition is a little easier, because when I went away to Illinois State, you know, you had to use the phone that was in the hallway. It was like prison. If you watch Orange is the New Black, you had to wait for somebody to get off the phone. And I was very homesick. I made it a one semester and then quit.
Right.
So I just wonder, like, you know, if Michael was out doing something at college or other kids, do they text their parents, oh, my God, just ran into Slash in a bar. It was really cool.
As parents, I think you want to set that standard. And you want to set it, you know, while they're in high school, while they're young, that, you know, we're going to connect. We're going to connect once in a while during the day. I think texting in this regard is wildly underrated in families. And the more you do that, the more you inoculate your child from being homesick, and it helps you knowing, okay, they're out there and they're okay. It really makes that transition for parents a lot easier, knowing I can text, I can FaceTime, I can talk on the iPad. And
it's changed things. You might be able to go away to school. I don't know.
Good luck, Michael.
Did you have one final thought on this, Dane?
But here it's such kind of a like a big question, because you know you have some of those parents that are saying, well, they're going to get introduced to this, they're going to encounter this. Well, maybe I should be the one introducing them, or in situations like, obviously you can't be, hey, here's a beer, kid. You know, you're going to see these at Lollapalooza, so you might as well know what that's like.
Although parents do it, Dane. But okay, yes.
But right. what are some of the ways that you can, just being a realist and understanding that this is going to happen? What are some of the ways that you can prepare your child for the kind of things that they're going to not only experience and encounter, but probably like do, you know, do some of that. And what things should they be watching out for that they
can
hear?
You got 30 seconds.
Right,
go.
Right. Okay. So,
no,
so
broadly
speaking, you don't want to protect your child from the real world. So if your impulse is insular, if it's like, you know, I'd prefer my child be home in the basement where they're safe and I know that, the more you bring them out in the world, the more you push them a little bit to get out in the world, the more resilient they're going to be. Because at the end of the night, they're going to come home and you're going to see that they're competent and resilient. They may have run into a difficulty that night, or you know, something a little traumatic that night, but they've made it through it, you know, and you're able to say on the back end, hey, good job, instead of, we never really did this and we've just been home the whole time.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong when your kid gets home if you get a little close to him to give him a hug and kind of sniff to see if they've been drinking or something. That's a parent,
so the
parent
recon
tip.
Hug.
Well, you know, it's just I've noticed my husband doing that a lot when Michael comes home. And Michael, at this point, has not had any alcohol or drugs. But it's funny because Jim goes in for the hug and he goes, "Hey, son, how was the night?" I hope Michael's not listening because I just gave away one of the tricks.
Well,
but
well, and here, like we're, and based on your experiences and even my experiences, like we're part of that generation of parents that has been through a lot of the same things, whereas, you know, my parents didn't, you know, they,
right.
They didn't do any of this stuff. They didn't know to hug and sniff and, you know,
we know all the tricks because right. We did all the tricks.
Right. And kids are also, just as a side note, kids are good at taking care of each other as well. Better than
Much
we were
better.
A generation ago.
Right.
So that's important to remember.
More compassion.
Too. Yep.
Always a pleasure. And next time you come back, I would like to talk about, you know, do you let your kids drink before they go away to college? Because to me, I kind of learned how on my own. I didn't need right. a parent to tell me how to do it.
It's a big, dicey question. We'll tackle it.
All right, perfect. Dr. John Duffy, how do people reach you?
Okay, so drjohnduffy.com. You can find my podcast, the Dr. John Duffy Podcast at WGN Plus. So check that out as well.
Thank you so much. Quick break, and then we're going to talk to Joe Thomas, who has resurrected Soundstage, and some pretty fascinating guests will be appearing. We'll talk about that after the news, 720 WGN. All right, we were talking music a little bit. It's Wendy Snyder here. Dane Neal is in for Bill Leff. And I remember watching on Channel 11 a great rock and roll show called Soundstage, WTTW, and then it went away for a little while, and Joe Thomas, the producer, director of WTTW Soundstage, it's back in action. Congratulations.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Watched many of bands up there, and we can talk about your upcoming schedule, but why don't you introduce someone who's going to be on the next soundstage?
Well, right off the bat, we've got a real special show coming up Tuesday, and then we added a date on Thursday. It's Kenny Loggins, who's going to be on the phone here, and
he is
Jim
on the
Messina.
Phone.
Hi, Kenny.
Hi. Hi, good morning.
So Kenny, Jim Messina, Michael McDonald, David Foster, and more guests than we could fit in one night. So
wow.
We sold out the first night in about a half hour, and so we decided today, I guess we're announcing that we're going to add Thursday, August 4th as a second performance to kind of get through all of Kenny's, you know, 30 or 40 hits or whatever he has
at
this point.
30 or 40,000 hits. How are you, Kenny?
I'm doing good.
And Jim Messina, you guys were such a duo, and I was talking to Joe Thomas off the air. It's nice to see old friends get back together and jam, because there is a lot of strife in the rock and roll business where there's a falling out, and it breaks my heart that you can't put your differences aside and get back to the music.
Yeah. It's a friend of mine said, "Why don't you go out every other summer with, you know, Jimmy?" And I said, "Well, why don't you go out with your ex-wife?" It's just we don't have a lot of strife, but we get along fine. So we're lucky that way. We can do this from time to time. But you know, there's a lot of acts where there's just so many things said that they can't take back. You know, but I'm lucky to be not one of those. So we're doing good, and I'm just really honored that Jimmy is going to join me on this 40-year retrospective, I guess, right, Joe?
Yeah, and you know, 40 years of your career. It's so funny when you start looking at the hits. Kenny has had like three different careers. You know, he's like the movie. I couldn't even remember half the movies that he had written songs for. From, you know, well, you're going to hear them all in the next couple nights, but. And, you know, the different artists, and David Foster and Michael McDonald and Stevie Nicks and all these different collaborations that he had. It's mind blowing. It's really fun.
One of the things I think
amazing.
That is.
Go ahead.
Well, one of the things I think that is so interesting, and Joe kind of touched on it, is the fact that it has spanned such a long career. And then when you come back now and you do these shows and that they sell out so quick and we have to add extra dates, are you surprised? You know, when you guys were making all that music, you knew it was big at the time, that this many years later, people would still love you just as much.
Oh, it's shocking. You know, getting up and doing Footloose and having the audience dance every night is just the best job in the world. What can I say?
And you had some writing credits and appeared on Glee. How was that a lot of fun?
Oh, no, I didn't appear on Glee.
You did some writing, though, for it.
Yeah, they did some on my music. But I've had a lot of luck with that stuff, with the television shows using my material. Grace and Frankie right now are leaning heavily on, I think it's Danny Song or
you know,
and there's a lot of that happening, so I'm really lucky that way.
It's cool enough when you make music and you turn the radio on when you get in your car and you hear your own song on the radio, but you going to movies, listening to your own song, was that just unbelievable?
Oh, that was really great. You know, the situation of, when Dean Pitchford and I wrote our theme song for Footloose, we wrote it for the barroom scene in the middle of the movie. So when I went to the screening, I had no idea that they'd moved it into the credits at the top of the movie. And it's the perfect spot for a movie song to be in. So I was shocked and pleased. And when I went to see the remake of Footloose, they did the same thing. The movie opens with my version of Footloose. And I turned to my girlfriend, I said, wow, they really nailed my sound. It sounds just like me. And she said, it is you.
Well, Kenny, I was wondering, with so many different songs to play and only so much time that you have during a given show, and we've seen that with some artists. I know with Paul McCartney when he was here for Lollapalooza. You know, how do you fit a lot of that stuff in? How do you choose some of the, of course, there's some standards that people are going to want to hear, but are there some that you know were really great songs that maybe weren't hits, but you know that your fans would love them or you would love to share them? How do you decide what you can play during these shows? Because you got to leave a lot out.
Yeah, that's for sure. But I have just enough hits to do a greatest hits show. And then I can flesh it out with a couple deep cuts. It all depends on the audience, you know, what sort of audience do I have, and whether it's a greatest hits audience or an audience that's more of a listening audience that I can push a little bit harder.
And how annoying is a producer like myself, Kenny, who keeps reminding you of more songs that he and the fans want to hear? We've been sending emails back and forth for about 6 weeks now, and I keep adding songs that, you know, were my favorites, and Kenny forgets it, and then I get by the third time that he forgets it that maybe that's one he doesn't want to do, so I back off a little bit.
Yeah. We call that the Nashville no. You just don't say anything.
All right. Well, so, Joe, you are the producer of this Kenny Loggins soundstage, and a second show has been added. Is it tough for you to look at this magnificent and prolific writer and rock and roller and tell him what to do?
Well, you know, the good thing about soundstage is we don't tell the guys.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean it that way.
We capture. And I remember we had Russell Crowe on the show, and he said, well, direct me. And I'm like, well, I don't do that. He goes, well, you're the director. So what our job and what I think works about soundstage is this is Kenny and Jim and Michael and their show. And I just make sure that the cameras are in the right spot and it's recorded wonderfully, and we stay out of the way. So I think that's been the success of this show, as opposed to some of those productions that... And remember, Wendy, and when we were listening to the show in the 70s and 80s, you know, you had Dick Cavett and you had all Michael Douglas and all these people that would have John Lennon on, believe it or not. Remember, John Lennon on Michael Douglas, it was a hoot with Yoko and the interview segments and things like that. The thing that made Soundstage so cool was... It's a show where kids could watch their artists perform, and nobody got, there's no announcer, there's no MC or anything.
No one got
in
the way.
Nobody got in the way. So I think that's our theory.
Kenny, who do you, like if you're going to see a show, I know Lollapalooza's coming to town this weekend. Who are you going to drop your money down on a ticket for?
That's a good question. There's so much good stuff out there right now. We don't see. I live in Santa Barbara, California.
Are you taking a shower right now? By the way.
Oh, I forgot.
Or I hope you're not using the facilities. Put this in soundstage.
I need the tape of the show.
This is a number one hit.
You've got to capture it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Yeah.
When do you just ask, like, of the bands that are out today? Yeah, like, what are you looking at and listening to today?
You know, well, my daughter just turned me on to an act that Joe, I think you had on soundstage, Johnny Swim. And I would put money down to see them. I would put money down to see Foy Vance. We're not talking about the elderly Coachella kind of acts. We're talking about new acts. At least I am right now.
See, I love the old acts. The old acts, I mean, that's why people love you and can't wait for you to get together with Jim Messina for the soundstage. Michael McDonald, for God's sakes, this is where music is, in my opinion.
You know, the other thing is a lot of these artists, we don't realize.
You sound like my dad.
We don't realize how young these guys were when they started.
Yeah. Yeah, I was tired. Those were strange days. Imagine going from clubs to arenas at 22 years old. It was disorienting. I'm not saying that there aren't great, you know, older, I call them legacy acts out there. They are great, but we know them. The ones that I would be most curious about to see if they can really play and sing. And I've seen some YouTube stuff on Johnny Swim, and they're pretty amazing.
I'll look into that.
She's the daughter of Ed Help, or of Joe Help Me. Who's the girl in Johnny Swim? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Donna Summer.
Oh, there
Donna
you go.
Summer.
Yes.
Oh, Donna Summer's daughter?
Yeah.
Wow.
She sings amazing.
I will check out Johnny Swim when you, when me and your dad listen to records, which we usually do on the weekends.
Kenny, my dad will insist on Bing Crosby.
All right, we have to take a quick break here. And Joe, it's up to you. We can keep Kenny on, or we can talk about the other acts that are coming up. But you, Joe Thomas, producer and director of WTTW's Soundstage, it's back in action. You have a pair of VIP tickets to give away. Let's take a break. We'll talk about that coming up.
Great. Thanks, Kenny.
All right, we'll take a break. It's Dane Neal. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. All right, Bill Leff is off for a couple of days. Dane Neal is sitting in his seat till this afternoon when Anna Balaval comes in. I'm Wendy Snyder. And Joe Thomas, I've known you for many years, but not really met you till the Cornerstones of Rock at the Granger Studios WTTW Soundstage with, of course, Jim Peterik, the whole world's friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you run a tight ship and put out a great product. So congratulations on Soundstage coming back. You do a fantastic job.
Well, thank you all for your support. And you rocked it out that night. You were the host, and it was the perfect night for you to host. And we'd love to have you come back and host one of the other shows.
Anytime you want. And talk about some of the shows that are coming up. Some of these have been filmed, like I'm looking at WTTW.com/soundstage. Bad Company. I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, we did it here, and then we also chased him to Red Rocks, and we have two episodes of that Bad Company coming up next season. So one in Red Rocks, and then they changed the set around and did kind of an intimate set at Soundstage.
Paul Rodgers still have the best voice in rock and
roll.
He
is amazing. And
smooth.
You know, Simon is a killer drummer, and the band brought back a lot of memories for us. And, you know, every once in a while, we try to, you know, keep it young, too. The good thing about music listeners like yourself and our audience is, you know, we push the envelope a little bit on the young side. And this week we're rehearsing all week with Regina Spektor, and she's going to be there Friday night. Unfortunately, the tickets are all sold, but I think we got you two if you want to give them away later on. But those tickets went in about 30 seconds. So,
I believe it.
And Regina's been here all week. She's an amazing artist. I know people are familiar with some of her TV work. She's written some themes for Well, you mentioned Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, and, my new favorite show. I binge watched.
Yeah, and then I think she's got a she's singing a song in Hamilton, and she's just an amazing artist. And getting to know her was a real thrill.
And you look at your career and just the access that you've had to some of these different, you know, either iconic bands or these great personalities. And it is interesting the way that you choose them. I mean, you say you capture it, and you kind of give some of that insight into the person who is that musician, even if they may be known in other walks of life, maybe more like Russell Crowe, having him. And I had, off the air, we had talked. I had gotten a chance to see Lisa Marie Presley at one of those things. So how do you choose the bands that you get? And you've talked about it, where sometimes you're chasing people around for a couple of years to make things happen when you're really committed.
Well, this is like the greatest job in the world. I mean, it's my musical taste, a lot of it, and I listen to my kids, I listen to friends, I listen to people like, you know, Wendy, people that I respect musically, and I just try to keep ahead of the bell curve a little bit. And so far it's paid off for me, and I stay out of the way. I think, I've been involved in a lot of projects, and if you don't toot your own horn too much and you let people do what they do, people get comfortable with you, and I think you capture the essence of what they are, and I think that's what we've been doing a good job with our team at Soundstage.
Blondie, I noticed.
That was a great show, too.
I love her.
Yeah.
Just saw her, I think, 2 years ago. She's still got it. Rocking and rolling. I love her so much. Toby Keith.
Yeah, that was a hoot. Toby and I go way back to, we did a record with him and the Beach Boys back in the 90s, and so he goes way back with us. And that's the other thing about this business. I mean, I've made friends and relationships that I've carried on now from my, you know, kind of career as a music producer and songwriter. And now it's like, hey, you guys, you know, when Bon Jovi came in to town, I said, you want to do Soundstage? I mean, it was really a major deal to get Bon Jovi to play in a 550-seat theater, you know, with what they do.
But yeah,
that's the power of your personality and the track record, and you'd be able to say, like, here's what these other artists did. And so I think it transcends a lot of the normal situations. It's a testament to what you're doing.
That, and like we were saying, piles of cash sometimes. Yeah.
And Brian Wilson, of course, you have a relationship with him. You've done songwriting with him, and
yeah, hopefully we've got one more in us, one more record, maybe next year. He's enjoying touring so much. And the thing that's funny about Brian is, remember, he was the Beach Boy that didn't want a tour, and now you can't get him off the road. I mean, I spoke to his wife the other day on the phone, and I was like, where's Brian? Well, he's picked up another 30 shows. So he loves the fan reaction. I know he's coming here to the Chicago Theater, I think, in October again.
Yeah, I saw that. We just saw him at Pitchfork. I took my son to see him, and it was magical, I have to tell you. And just the crowd of people, you had your millennials who knew every word to Pet Sounds. You had people my age, and there's some older people there, too, and everybody just came together for Brian Wilson.
And you know, these guys were kids when they started. I wanted to say that with Kenny. A real quick, funny story. Carl Wilson, Brian's youngest brother, and Timothy Schmidt of the Eagles and I were in a dinner once, and Timothy,
listen to these stories that Joe Thomas
like, and then the Pope showed up.
Well, it's kind of funny because they both are the nicest guys in the world, and Timothy said to Carl, you know, I saw you when I was 14 years old at the Santa Barbara Bowl. And Carl kind of looked at him and he didn't know how to take it. He goes, well, I was 14 then too when I was playing. So you realize, I mean, this kid was 14 years old playing at the Santa Barbara Bowl, and he influenced another 14-year-old who became one of the Eagles. And what, like Kenny was saying, at 20 years old, he was doing arenas. So I heard the doctor that you had on before about the you know, how do you break these kids into the fact that you're 20 years old or 18 years old, and there's 30,000 people that are, you know, adoring you and selling records to them, and you're in, you know, it's a real culture shock.
So yeah, absolutely.
I really like to give these guys a break and girls a break in the music business, because it's tough.
It is tough. And Kenny Loggins, thank you so much for setting us up with saying hello
Great.
To him.
Well, thanks for having me, and maybe we'll be back when we actually air the season, because right now we're just shooting
right.
The show. So when we air it, I'll come back and pitch our season to you.
Please do. And you have a pair of tickets to give away for the Regina Spektor show.
We do. So
what's all the info, and we'll tell people how to win.
Basically, you just go to WTTW.com/soundstage, and you could order tickets for the new Kenny Loggins show on
just added
Thursday, and you can get two tickets if you call in your show, however you guys want to give it away, to Regina Spektor, or there's, I think, two meet and greets to meet Kenny.
Wow.
Oh my God. All right, so now this is too much. I don't know what we have. A pair of tickets. I'm all confused. So a pair of tickets for the Regina Spektor show
Friday night.
Okay, this Friday, so you have to go. And if you can, be the 10th caller, 312-981-7200. That's the 10th caller right now for Regina Spektor Friday night. And what else do you have for us?
And then I think you they said a meet and greet for Kenny Loggins on Tuesday night. If he's actually going to sit there and meet you and you get to ask him questions and take a picture.
How about that? Oh, those tickets are gone. I have just taken them. We'll do caller number 12 for the meet and greet for Kenny Loggins on Tuesday. Again, you have to go. This is Friday, Regina Spektor, 10th caller, and 12th caller for next Tuesday, Kenny Loggins meet and greet, 312-981-7200. Thank you a million, Joe Thomas.
Thanks for
nice
having
to
me, guys.
See you. Quick break, and we'll come back and find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch and who is hosting. Thank you, Kim Gordon. The conversation is going to be very rapido because sitting in the Bill Left chair for the second half of the show is Kevin. I said, get ready. Is what? I know this is stupid, but it just makes me laugh harder than anything. Bill Left is one of the funniest guys I've ever worked with in my entire life. And it's so juvenile and stupid, but I love when he says your name. Kevin?
You're putting me on the spot here.
That's what I do.
I feel like we're at WGN TV where they can't take cues either. Kevin, I'm so proud of you sometimes. Don't fail me.
Anna Balaval. Is
you
that how
say
I say it?
Perfectly.
I say it more mellifluously.
Yes, because you speak French.
Well, I did. I mean, I don't really. I took four years of it in high school.
When you say décolletage, you say it very well. Or that other thing from...
L'essence.
L'essence.
Bonjour.
S'il vous plaît, avec vous les gris poupons.
You, please give me the gris poupons.
Right, don't you remember the commercial?
Yeah,
that's
do.
All I know. That is all I know. Wendy, it's so awesome to be here with you.
I was telling you off the air, I sort of feel like I'm cheating on Bill Left because he had you first.
But I'm back for you.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. Anna Balaval, we were talking off the air, too. This is a long day for you. This is, I get, like, it's called anticipatory anxiety when you have things hanging over your head.
Mm-hmm.
All morning long were you thinking, oh, my God, I got to go to WGN.
Mm-hmm. All morning long. I had an alert.
so you wouldn't
on the
forget.
Phone. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be here tomorrow as well.
Yes, you are.
And so I even told my husband to send me an email. Yeah.
All right. Here's the weird thing. I use my cell phone, my iPhone, to wake myself up every day. And today, Bill's not here, so I have to work a little harder. It's not like I
2.5 hours instead of 2.
Yeah. I mean, it's just easy with Bill here because he handles, you know, half the
but
weight.
But you handle the board. And can I just say how sexy that is? That you handle
she's
the board.
She's hitting on me already. She's hitting on me. Does she do this with Bill?
No, this is a bit of a girl crush because I know that that is not easy. And I mean, it's gotten easier with years, but you man it and then you're able to speak fluently and perfect. I mean, seriously, I am not blowing smoke up your you know what. I'm saying that that is very sexy.
Well, thank you for blowing smoke up my hoo-ha.
Mm-hmm. That's what we call it in Spanish.
Is that
Hoo-ha.
Really?
No, Wendy, please.
Oh, this is going to be a long afternoon, but a pleasant
one. I
didn't
say anything.
But this morning, so I wanted to get in a little earlier because I usually, as I mentioned earlier today, I like to come in at showtime. Because if I come in too early and Bill gets in about 9:15, 9:30, I get in at about 10 to 10. And we go on the air at 10. Because if I'm there, we waste so much material talking to each other. And then I feel funny if we're just sitting in there not talking.
But were you like that when both co-hosts were late or love to live on the edge like you do? Because what happened? I mean, Bill will be here at 9:15, but you must have had a co-host at some point in your illustrious career where you had a co-host who said, yeah, we'll show up 5 minutes before, maybe drunk.
Well, that was a different time back then.
You could do it.
And that really wasn't with a co-host. That was just playing music on the Loop radio station. So that was easy to just, you know, have a few and go, here's Bob Seger for the 90th time.
Yeah.
But this morning, I set my alarm. I wanted to get up early, take a shower, get here early. And I must have not hit the snooze because I went right back to sleep. And when I picked up my phone, I said, boy, it's lighter out than usual. And I looked at the phone and it was 8:07.
Oh, how awful.
So that's a little freak out.
That's an awful feeling. Lourdes Duarte, who does the 4 a.m. news, was late today. She woke up at 3:11.
And she's got to drive in. She's got to get her pretty face on.
It freaked her out. I'm like, that must have ruined you for the rest of the day. She said it was awful, awful. It's an awful feeling.
Yeah, but how can you combat that? You came in a little close to showtime, too. Yeah. What were you doing in between shows?
Freaking me out because I
heard
you.
Yeah, but you were shopping.
I was returning.
Oh, okay.
And I had lunch. And then I got myself a coffee. And the Starbucks lady was taking forever. And it made me very nervous. I am completely type A. I like to show up early, so I tried the Wendy method. And
rolling in at the last minute.
I'm going to be here tomorrow at 12:30 or 12. I can't handle it. It makes me very nervous. It feels like I was just shopping at Nordstrom. Now I'm doing a radio show.
You were.
That's just, I can't handle that.
But that is the thing is, I would say the biggest stressor in life is running late.
Yes.
Because if you're on time, if there's an accident, I can take another route.
Right.
You have options. But why do we play it so last minute when that is like the biggest stressor in this world is getting somewhere on time?
And let me tell you, if you are planning to come to the city of Chicago for anything other than Lollapalooza, don't come. Don't, please do us all a favor and don't come. It's crazy traffic.
All the
time. It is awful. It took me forever to come from South Loop to here on Michigan Avenue. A friend of mine, it took her an hour and 15 from South Loop to Streeterville yesterday.
It takes me a half an hour on Lower Wacker Drive when you get off on the Eisenhower to get onto Lower Michigan. It's about a half an hour every morning because everything goes down to one lane. But then there are some mornings that it's not there because most wise people will go, why do you keep taking that way? Because there every third day, I fly in five minutes.
Right. But no, this weekend is insane. There's a soccer game tonight. It's just
the
nuts.
World Cup.
Good afternoon. I'm Jill Egan.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jill. Oh, hi, Jill.
She will talk to us later. Is it the World Cup? Am I safe to just say that?
Okay. No.
I don't even follow soccer at all.
It's some kind of soccer game between Germany and Italy, but I don't know if it's a cup. I think it may be like a show.
You're worse than I am.
I think it's just like an international game.
An international, thingy.
International thingy.
Yeah.
You made fun of me when I said, is it a cup?
Well, because I know it's not the World Cup, so I can make fun of you at that level, but I can't take it any further than that. This is it. This is my whole sports knowledge.
Are you into sports a lot?
No, not at all.
I am 100% into the Blackhawks, and that happened about 3 years ago, hook, line, and sinker. Now I get it.
Yeah.
And the White Sox I've always been a fan of just because my grandfather was a White Sox fan. And I really, it might be, I don't know. But we'll talk to Rich Lankoff about that. News is coming up next. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Anibal Laval in for Bill Leff. You got to find a funny way to say his name so I can torment him with that when he comes back.
Okay.
It's 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Anibal Laval. And I'm telling you, not only is Bill Leff on vacation for a couple of days, Kevin Richter is on vacation. We're going to be talking to Rich Lankoff momentarily. And I just asked Kevin where he was and he goes, oh, yeah, I suppose I should get him, huh?
Oh, he didn't even fake it. He didn't say like, oh, my God, he was there on line one.
He didn't fake it at all. So, Rich, you should have just seen yourself.
I just brought him in.
And
he's right here. Yep.
You did not.
I did this.
You had Michael do it. All right, Rich Lankoff.
I am here. I was here.
You don't have to wait for an invitation.
You should just walk in, Rich.
Yeah,
you know the way.
I'm going to regret saying this, first of all. But you know, you always had a house when you were growing up that everybody congregated at. Either they had a better basement than anyone. I want that to be the Bill and Wendy show, where people, if they're just walking by, can come in.
Everyone's listening to this on the street, so they could.
But I mean, I just want people to be able to just come in and say, hey, what's going on?
I know. I think that's how your listeners feel.
Well, I'm not talking listeners. I'm just talking,
Don't invite everybody. You shouldn't. We are going to need a release for that.
But, anybody who, like Rich, you don't need to be told to come in. Just
Very
come
nice.
In.
I appreciate that.
You're more than welcome.
Nice to meet you,
Rich.
Yeah,
nice to meet you. You don't look like Bill.
It's a transformation, and it takes a long time.
All right, Rich Lankoff, you have Legal Face Off, which is on WGN Plus, and your partner in crime?
Jason Whiteside.
And
Much rumored, never seen Jason Whiteside.
I don't think I've ever met him.
Yes. He's a
myth. He's a hologram?
Exactly.
Is he your imaginary friend?
He's a meme.
All right. Let's talk John Hinckley Jr. because I heard the news that after more than 35 years, and not even really in prison, this is he was in a psychiatric hospital, correct?
Yeah, he was in a hospital, St. Elizabeth, outside of D.C. You know, really one of the first times, probably the most prominent time in history, we heard about the insanity defense. That's why that case was so prominent. Of course, you know, in addition to trying to assassinate the president, that was one of the first times that this insanity defense was used successfully. And since then, of course, a lot of the laws have been changed in the wake of him going to a hospital instead of a jail. Congress and a lot of the states changed the laws to make it much more difficult to successfully assert the insanity defense. But yeah, that's he's been in a hospital for 35 years.
So here's my question. Great if he has he's been seeking psychiatric help for 35 years. And I guess my question is, why after 35 years do they now go, you know what, he's okay, he's going to go live with his mom for a year. After that, he can move wherever he wants, but his psychiatric team has to approve a roommate that he would have.
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, I personally don't agree with it. You know, Patty Davis, Ron Reagan Jr. have come out consistently against releasing him in this manner.
And granted, the attempt at Ronald Reagan's life was not successful, but the fact that you attempted to kill a president of the United States, to me, is a big deal.
Right. Sure. And remember, you mentioned Brady, I heard. James Brady's death was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner when he died.
Many years later.
Right. I mean, just
2014.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was shot in the head. And just recently, like I said, when he was examined by the medical examiner, that was ruled a homicide. So John Hinckley is a murderer. He committed homicide. They did not try him for that because they decided, the prosecutors decided that given the amount of time that had elapsed, it would be difficult. And also because the jury did find that he was not guilty by reason of insanity, they thought there would be double jeopardy issues. But yeah, John Hinckley did murder someone and, of course, attempted to assassinate the president and also shot many others. I think he was charged with 13 counts at the time. So to your point, should that kind of person be allowed to walk around, you know, freely? The argument that was made and has been made is that he has served his time. He is no longer a danger to society. He's been obviously very closely watched, one of the most closely watched mental health
patients
in the world. So the doctors have ruled that he's no longer a threat. But very importantly, you know, people have come out and said that there's been a couple of examples when he has been released.
Right.
When he's lied.
Yeah.
I mean, he said he was going to the movies one time and they found him at a bookstore standing in front of a Reagan display. I mean, how strange is that?
About presidential assassinations.
Exactly.
Or attempted assassinations. So I read somewhere that I don't know who said this, but that there are no guarantees when you release these people back.
Right.
That judges spend a long time, that this guy was, you know, the closest monitored case, and that he is in remission of his mental illness, but there are no guarantees.
Of course, yeah.
But they are going to watch him closely, and he did serve 35 years, which cost taxpayer money. So
exactly.
Serve or get help for 35 years, and why? I mean, what has changed, like, 20 years ago, why didn't they let him out? Has he gotten better in 15 years? That's my question. Why now, all of a sudden, we feel his mental health is good enough for him to be released?
Sure. It's a combination of the amount of time that he served, as you mentioned, you know, meaning that he has served his time. He has served his penalty for the crimes that he was, acquitted of, but that he committed. And a combination of he has been found by doctors to be no longer a threat. And that's really the standard for someone who has been judged like he has to be mentally incapable. The standard is he's no longer a threat to society. Now, many would argue that he is. And
I was going to ask you, why do you not believe that this should be done?
Well, I just think, you know, given the gravity of a situation, given the gravity of what he did, you know, there's not many, thankfully, presidential assassins in history or would-be assassins. And I think there's certain levels of crime that, you know, deserve, hey, you try to assassinate the president, you're in for good.
Right. That's
even
it.
If you're in a mental hospital, which we would probably all agree is a much less you know, severe penalty than serving time in prison. You should be in that until, you know, they carry you out. That's what a lot of people think.
Right.
But, you know, the judge felt differently, obviously.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that James Brady died in 2014 at the age of 73. I do remember this was 1981 that
Correct.
This happened. I remember seeing the police or the television reports, and they had said that James Brady was dead. They had called his death and then said, oops, wait a minute, he is not dead.
Well, remember, he took a bullet in the head. And this was a devastator bullet. This was the kind of bullet, and this was the first time most of us had ever heard of this. Mm-hmm. It was the kind of bullet that, upon impact, it explodes in your body.
Yeah.
So, you know, an incredibly violent shooting, an incredibly devastating injury to James Brady that eventually, even though it was many years later, led to his death.
And Tim McCarthy, of course, is he still police chief in Orland Park?
He was for many years, yeah. I'm not sure if he still is, but, yeah, moved out here and very successful career as a police chief.
Absolutely. All this to get the attention of Jodie Foster.
I was just going to say, I'd be freaked out if I was Jodie Foster.
Right, because he's out now.
Absolutely. I mean, he very famously wrote a letter that they found in his hotel that said basically that I'm trying to do this to impress you. Yeah, I mean, if you're Jodie Foster, listen, presumably all of the doctors are telling the truth when they say that he's rehabbed and he's, you know, healthy. But again, in the last few years, he's shown two examples of lying about where he's going to be. Now, he wasn't outside Jodie Foster's home, but it's still troubling. It would be troubling to me as a prosecutor to think that this person, years later, 30 years later, is still lying about things. It's not like he's lying about whether he wants, you know, turkey or ham for lunch.
Right.
He's lying about where he's going to be when he's outside of jail. That's a big deal to me. I would have, you know, not let him out if I was the
judge. And he's living with his mom. He's 61. His mom must be elderly.
And I heard she's not in great health. So is this something that maybe contributed to his release where he's able to take care of her?
Yeah, I mean, she has, you know, the court records show that she has some money. She had to show that she had enough money to pay for additional treatment and take care of him.
And Alexandria, Virginia, nice area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he came from a, you know, well-to-do family. I think it was in Dallas. He went to Texas Tech. So, yeah, I mean, I think his mom has enough money to support him, but that was definitely a factor in the judge's release that, you know, probably not many years between him and his mom, you know, left on this earth, but no solace to the people that he shot.
Exactly. We have to take a quick break. We are talking to Rich Lankoff. You can find his podcast at WGNplus.com, Legal Face Off, and 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Anna Balaval. It's 720 WGN. All right, it's Wendy Snyder here. Bill left off for the rest of the week, taking an extended vacay. So Anna Balaval is in for him. Do I say it better than he does?
Always, 100%.
And Rich Lankoff is here. We were talking about the would-be Reagan assassin, John Hinckley Jr. Has he been freed already? Is he out and about right now?
I think he's not. It was just announced today, so you know, probably a couple days to process, but... yeah, look for John Hinckley in a bookstore near you pretty soon.
August 5th, he gets out.
Okay.
That's just weird.
I mean, he can't use social media or the internet. That's one of the conditions. But
which is smart because he could get a lot of followers.
Sure.
There's a lot of weirdos out there.
There are a lot of weirdos there.
There are a lot of weirdos.
Would probably want to marry him. There are always those women who...
that are waiting outside.
Well, he has a relationship. One of the things that was brought out in the hearing was that he has a relationship, but it's platonic. So maybe that'll turn a different way.
And they consider that a relationship when it is platonic?
I have been told that every guy who has a girlfriend, there's always hope. It's not just platonic.
Right.
I don't know if that's true, but I don't know. I don't know about John Hinckley Jr. George, what do you think about all this?
Hello.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Mike, I've been following this for quite a while, and I think it's wrong they're letting him out of jail. That's because his family's got money. That Hinckley Water, he's been getting out of, he goes home on weekends and that.
It's not the Hinckley Water Company, is it? Rich, do you know anything about that?
I think there's a connection.
I'm not related to the Snyder Pretzel fame. I wish I was.
No, I'm sorry. I just think it's totally wrong. And not to mention Trump, but he actually mentioned it in his speech today. He thought it was wrong. But I think it's totally wrong that the secretary, he suffered. He was shot and he suffered. He died from those wounds. And Reagan almost died. And this clown is being set free.
That's what I mean. And Rich said that. Rich Lankoff said that as well. You know, you attempt to take the life of a president. Who cares if you're better?
It's at the same level of the Pope. The Pope can forgive you, but you should stay in jail.
And remember, if this happened, first of all, Hinckley's dad was an energy executive, I believe. But if this happened today, if it happened, you know, 3 years after 81, he would have likely been convicted of many of the 13 counts that he was charged with.
Because they tightened the laws.
They tightened the laws. So today, if this happened, this guy would be in jail probably for life. Okay. If not, you know, at this point, he might have faced the death penalty if that was in place. So, yeah, I agree that this person should not be walking free.
We agree with you, George. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm glad you're mentioning this.
Absolutely. And if Donald Trump is, you know, thinking it's a bad idea, then by all means it is. We only have a couple of minutes, but I have teenage boys. Anna, your kids are a little younger, but the Slender Man game was going around for a long time, and there were some developments in the Slender Man case with, were they two 16-year-old girls?
They were 13-year-olds.
13, that's right.
Who stabbed a friend 19 times, left her for dead. She crawled away and managed to survive, and they said that this was a tribute to the Slender Man, which is an online boogeyman sort of thing.
Yes,
and that they feared that if they didn't commit this crime, then Slender Man would have gotten them or their family.
Slender Man is a fictional thing, by the way.
Yes, yeah, fictional thing. A judge ruled that they will be tried as adults. So in Wisconsin, the presumption is if you're 10 years old or older when you commit a homicide, the presumption is that you will be tried as an adult.
Wow.
So
10 is young.
Absolutely. Well, so is murder, right?
But
so
don't you know by 10 years old, I mean, your kids are younger.
Yeah.
You know you don't take a life. You know you don't. I mean, you shouldn't hurt anyone, let
but
alone kill someone.
But they believed a video game, Wendy. They may have a weird perception of survival, of life and death.
Do you really believe that, or do you think you believe that? We all know right from wrong, and I know 10 seems very young, but come on, you don't kill, you don't stay in 19 times.
Right, and it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like Hinckley. I mean, it's a combination, the logic behind the 10 years old is combination of knowing right from wrong, but also the gravity of that kind of crime means that even if you don't necessarily know right from wrong, the gravity of that, you know, of trying to murder someone, stabbing them 19 times, means that you should, instead of facing 3 years in jail, which a juvenile would, facing, you know, 35 years plus. So the appellate court in Wisconsin upheld the trial judge's decision to try them as adults, which, you know, I think is a good thing.
Yeah. So how many years do they face?
I think it's 35 years minimum if they're convicted.
Can they get life if... Would this?
She didn't die, so
right.
It was
no, but
murder?
I mean, if you're a 10-year-old or a 13-year-old accused of murder as an adult,
sure, yeah,
they could get life in prison.
Absolutely.
And you know, I mean, think about it. You push someone in front of a car. That's a terrible thing, and if they die, that's a horrible thing. Mm-hmm. But to stab someone 19 times, I mean, that to me is a whole. That's kid stuff. Pushing someone, falls. Those are mm-hmm. kid things. This is heinous.
Mm-hmm.
It really is when I think about it.
No question.
And the poor therapy this victim must be going through, being stabbed by what?
Friends.
Were they friends? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, trial hasn't even started yet, so she's going to have to go through this all again.
Oh, my goodness. She may have to testify.
Right. Definitely.
It's a crazy world in which we live. We brought up something earlier on the first half of the show. We were talking about Bill Clinton. He did a lovely job at the DNC last night. Looks a little bit older. Didn't realize he had some heart surgeries and stuff. But Dana, Neil and I were talking about it off the air. He was impeached. And my question was, you know, if he was impeached, why wasn't he removed from office? Was it a civil impeachment and not a legal impeachment?
Well, he was impeached before, you know, before the House of Representatives. And impeachment means that he was charged with a crime and he had a trial and he was acquitted. So even though he was impeached, you know, everyone thinks impeached, it just sounds like it means that you were found guilty.
And taken out of office.
Right. Impeached means, I mean, he was in fact charged with a crime, but they had a trial in the Senate. And the Senate determined that he was not guilty. He was acquitted. So he was absolutely impeached. But that just means that he was charged with a crime. So it's sort of like being charged with, you know, any regular crime and a jury coming back and finding you innocent. That's what happened in this case. Right. But it was just a government trial versus a civil or criminal one.
So right. You don't get fired from your job then? You don't get fired from your job because you weren't guilty. Yeah, I mean,
if he was convicted, mm-hmm. if he was convicted, then he
would have been taken out.
Correct.
Because I always hear that when they're saying, you know, this guy was impeached. Right. And it's like, yeah, he was, but he really wasn't. But
impeached means accused and went
charged,
through a trial.
Formally charged. But obviously, you know, due process mandates that you get a trial, which he did, and he was acquitted.
See, I don't know anything about law. That's why I am going to call Rich Lankoff
if I'm
ever in
trouble. That's why you should.
All right. Well, how do people find you?
We're on iTunes. We are on WGNplus.com. And just search for Legal Face Off. You could follow us on our Facebook page, also on Twitter. And we will be recording our next episode tomorrow covering many of these topics. We have Len Goodman on, who is Blagojevich's appellate lawyer, talking about Blagojevich's upcoming hearing to try to get his sentence reduced.
He should. That's just way too long. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think so,
I'm on record as saying it, but way too long.
Yeah, we'll see what the judge says. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, there's been
he's asking for five more or just five with time served?
Well, he has served three out of the 14 years. Mm-hmm. They dropped some of the counts against him, but that won't necessarily mean a reduction in his sentence. Mm-hmm. So they're asking ideally for time served and letting him go. All signs point that he will probably be in there for a while.
Well, at least his band will get better.
Yeah. The Elvis impersonation band.
The Jailhouse Rockers.
Yes.
That's what they are. Rich, always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rich.
And speaking of Bill Clinton, Andrea Darlis is live in Philadelphia, so we're going to check in with her after the news. That's coming up next on 720 WGN. That's what I like about Anna Balaval. Never a dull moment with you, woman. Never a dull woman.
Well, it's 2 o'clock. I'm starting to hit a wall. This is when I hit a wall.
Well, see, I was going to ask you that. Bill left's off for the rest of the week. I'm Wendy Snyder. And listen, this is fun. This is not, a tough outside job on a hot day. It's really easy and it's really fun. And I'm so grateful and happy to be here. But what time do you wake up in the morning?
Today I woke up at 4:30, so I have it pretty good. Yesterday I woke up at 3 because we had to go to Oshkosh. I drive to locations. I don't have to go to the studio to meet the crew. I do my own hair and makeup at home, so I can sleep a little.
Right.
More than others.
But you did a lot of driving.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I saw you got your little coffee before you came on the air at 12 noon, or excuse me, at 1 o'clock. But you do hit that wall, and then all of a sudden, you're just staring out the window.
My kids would tell you I'm really grumpy around 5. Yeah, I
hope you're gone by then. I don't really want to see you grumpy.
Right, no. You're cranky, Mama. That's what my son says.
And how do you answer that?
Yeah, I will say, yes, I am cranky. I'm waiting till it's 6 so I can have wine.
And why do you have to wait till 6 o'clock?
I don't know. It's a Catholic thing. I don't know.
See, I'm Catholic, and 4 o'clock is all I have to go to, especially when you get up so early.
I know, but I feel bad. I also feel bad if my husband's not home, because I don't want him to. I was raised by like a 1950s housewife. I always feel bad when he shows up and I'm having a glass of wine, and maybe he'll be like, what's this woman doing raising my children while she's getting...
Oh, boy. Really?
I know. I'll get over it. I'll get over it because I have a 3-year-old, so I'll get over it. I have another kid that I can drink while I raise him. I have a Southern friend that shall remain nameless. She's from Mississippi, and my dad offered her a drink, and you know, we had the kids at this party, and we were all hanging out. My dad's like, would you like another cocktail? And she goes, yes, Mr. Balaval, alcohol makes me a better mother.
I agree, because it takes the edge off.
I think so.
All right. Have you been? I know that Pokemon Go is all the rage.
Yes. Are you still doing it?
I'm only on level 3. Soon to be on level 4.
Wow.
But it's just stupid. I just like sometimes if I'm out during the noon break, mm-hmm. I'll go see because there are a lot of Pokemon down here, and it teaches me stuff because
yes. Landmarks.
I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, and I want people to be honest. Did you know that there is a piece of one of the World Trade Towers from 9/11 in our Tribune Tower?
Yes.
How did I not know that?
You don't take the architectural tour, apparently.
No, I don't. Will you give me a personalized one?
Well, you don't have tourists visiting you. I do. I have people coming from out of town. And with the around town, I've learned a lot.
Because I know there's, like, from the pyramids of Giza.
Right.
I looked around, and I did not know that part of the World Trade Center was there.
That's pretty cool.
It is really cool. And I walked over there and looked at it. So, see, Pokemon Go is kind of a good way to see landmarks. Although, Kevin is way into it. Our producer, Kevin Richter.
Just for research.
Is this why he's so slow today?
No, he's even too slow to play that today.
Hey, I'm on top of everything.
What level are you on?
I'm level 16 now.
Yesterday was 14.
There are more than 5 levels?
You know what it is, though? I figured it out. Since I'm walking to and from the train every day, I just have it out. So I get to, you know, be on top of it much faster than a lot of people.
I had to download it. I remember I called you because I had to chase them for the WGM morning rooms.
Right.
And so, you know, we are all older. And so we called Marcus for anything that has to do with internet trending. It's for real. He has that job for a reason because he's like our IT guy.
Okay.
So
she's getting tired, people.
Yeah. It's going to be Spanish soon. you're going to switch. So the prepositions are going to go to hell. Just
don't
wait.
Swear because I don't speak Spanish and I'm not going to know when you slip one in.
I won't.
All right.
So I called Marcus and he says, just download it and start chasing them. And it's a lot of fun. And at the beginning, it felt like a lot of fun. It was cute. But then I noticed how focused I would be on it and how I would run into things. My camera woman had to be like, you're going to hit a branch. Pay attention. You're about to cross the street. And you get really focused on it. And then I gave it to my daughter and my daughter really enjoyed it. And she was in the car doing it in the back seat while I was driving. And she was catching a few of them on Columbus. And then I said, then I gave it to her yesterday when I picked her up at camp. She was over it.
It is. I'm almost over it, too.
She's over it.
I have to tell you. I'm only on level 3, and I just do it every once in a while. My kids, it's pretty funny because they're 3.5 years apart, but it's a big 3.5 years, mm-hmm. 13 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, almost every night, they're like, hey, let's go catch some Pokemon. And they go out and walk around together.
That's cool.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
It's not like you.
Would they let me join? Or?
Oh, look.
And LaGrange. Do it alone.
Kevin will be in LaGrange.
Can I ride home with you, Wendy? Absolutely. They would love to hang out with you.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm hanging out with them at work because even though Kevin's a little older than a teenage boy, between you and Belle, I hear so many dinguses and crazy things going around.
If you act like a dingus, I'm going to call you a dingus.
Dingus.
I just want to say we might be in trouble. Did you get the email from the powers that be here at WGN Radio?
I don't want to talk about
Pokemon Go.
People playing during working hours?
Well, it's not that, but you have to be careful. First of all, it was put out there that, you know, these people are luring you into areas and robbing you or hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful. Play with caution. But you also have to think about ways that your accounts may be compromised, especially if you've signed in with your Google account, which most people have done.
That's what I did.
Yeah, so now I'm kind of thinking.
But supposedly Google had fixed whatever
it was allowing them
to get our social security and go on a shopping spree.
Right, and at least if they get something I like.
Right, we could share.
I like that. But so there is something that you have to keep in mind that I don't know. I am very gullible and believe that, you know, just because it's on my phone, it's been cleared by someone and it's completely safe.
Bill Gates took care of it. He's all good.
All right. Well, this craze, Bill is so against it because Bill's like, you know, don't waste your time doing this. Go read a book. But, you know, how you spend your pastime is your own business. Maybe some people don't want to read a book.
I read a book and did Pokemon.
You are talented.
I can do both. But Bill didn't even know what Facebook Live was. I did this while we were on the
air.
I
watched it.
He was like, what? Are we in a tunnel?
But see, now that's not his thing.
No.
That's
okay.
I am a techno girl.
Yes.
I like technology. I like gadgets. I like electronics. That's what I'm into. So to me, that he loves movies.
Right.
I like tech.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to play my little Pokemon Go. And somebody had said about, you know, reading a book. Someone had actually texted and said, my kid has read almost all of her summer reading that was given out by the high school. You're supposed to do the summer reading over the summer.
Right.
And she is sick of reading for the day, so she is going out to unwind and do a little Pokemon Go.
I think that's great.
All things balance. In moderation.
Balance.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But now it's imbalanced because people are actually naming their babies after Pokemon monsters. Can we talk about that
next? I can totally see that.
Anna Balaval in for Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Aren't the Simpsons in Springfield? Oops.
Wait. I don't think it's Illinois.
It is in Illinois.
I thought it was East Coast.
Oh, they're from Illinois, I think.
The Simpsons? No, we can't hear you, Kevin.
I don't think they ever officially stated
where they were.
Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Anna Balaval, Anna Balaval, which is it? Anna. You know,
it's whatever you want to call me. At this point, after 20 years in Chicago, I respond to Anna, especially in the South Side.
I got to tell you, I'm a little confused here because you have an Andrea Darlis, who we're going to talk to at 2:30, mm-hmm. who I've never, ever called anyone Andrea. It's always been Andrea.
Andrea, yeah.
And then we have Anna DeVlantes.
Who people started calling Anna when I moved here.
I did. I said, you know, when she first started here, I'm like, oh, an Anna DeVlantes. And it's like, no, it's Anna. And you're Anna Balaval.
That's it. That's all
right.
I am.
All right. That's all.
It's because Anna is with a double N, but I actually have a cousin whose name is Anna Cristina, and she spells it with a double N. But she grew up in Boca in Florida, and there's a lot of Latinos there.
Everything.
That changes everything because they can pronounce it. Their mouth does that. I noticed like certain ethnicities can do the accent better.
I cannot. I really wish I took Spanish. I took French for reasons I don't know. My sister talked me into it. It's a prettier language, she said. I think all languages that are really pretty.
Romance languages, for sure.
Absolutely. My son took Latin. That's not really going to help him unless he just wanted to do it. And I mean,
he should have taken Esperanto or something. What the heck?
I don't know. Unless the Pope comes to visit him. I don't know. You know,
and the Pope speaks Spanish because he's Argentinian.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
I have to know these things.
Pope.
I have to know these things.
All right. So we were talking about Pokemon.
Yes.
And people have actually started naming themselves or naming their kids after. This is stupid. I'm sorry. I'm just going to come right out and say it.
It is. Because the names are awful.
They're not good.
What do you mean?
Oh, Kevin, don't tell me you have considered naming.
No, I'm not saying that, but the names aren't awful.
For a human.
All right, Onyx. Is that bad? Look,
he really is upset because I said they were all. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I went traditional with my kids' names. I wanted something different. I had suggested for our first son, Michael, I wanted to call him Cooper because Jim really likes baseball, and I thought in honor of Cooperstown.
Mm-hmm. Cooperman.
You are on break.
You are. And where is he going? Is he going on vacation?
No. Bill goes away. He thinks, you know, while the cat's away. Oh, you are.
He's high already then.
On life. Careful. It's going to be like a slap happy
now
show.
Now they're going to have to make him pee in a cup. I'm sorry. I work for this company too.
It's been fun, guys.
He's fine. He is fine.
A Pokemon cup.
Pokey cup.
Yes. Now listen, Onyx is not a bad name.
No. And I guarantee there are people named Onyx already.
All right. Let's see. Who else do we have? Star.
That's fine. No, there
Star
are weirder
Jones,
ones.
That's the only one I
think. You mean Star You or Star Me? It's like, come on. You got to fully commit. You can't just be Star.
No.
Why not?
That's not the name.
In order for you to get christened, you're going to have to be like Star Marie or Star. Like where I come from, in order for you to be christened by the Catholic Church, you needed like a saint's name.
Right.
Saint middle name. So people would name like Shaquille Jose when Shaquille O'Neal was really big.
Really?
Like, Shaquille Jose. You know, like,
seriously,
I don't know. Rihanna Margarita.
Shaggy Joe.
Rihanna Margarita. So that you could get christened. For real. I know people would combine their names. Like, I had a friend whose parents were Walter and Idalia, right? So her name was Wamaid. Walter ama Idalia. Walter loves Idalia. And they got divorced, which was unfortunate. The kid's name is Wamaid. But it was like Wamaid. I don't know. Wamaid Maria.
Oh my goodness.
The Catholic Church wouldn't christen your child if you didn't have a good Catholic name.
Yeah, I'm Wendy Susan. So that wasn't a saint's name.
I don't think so. But I'm Anna Maria. So yeah.
Of course you are.
Of course I am.
What about Rosilia? Or is it Rosalia? I don't know how they're saying it. All of a sudden, I'm turning into Annabelle.
I guess you are.
Rosalia.
Does anyone know?
What the heck?
You are good. You have a Telemundo telenovela now?
Yes. Whatever that means so quickly. all right. I don't even have. Kevin, you printed this crazily. Oh, here we go. Starmie and Ivysaur are the people in the people, the monsters in Pokemon.
Yes.
So Star and Ivy, that inspired the name.
Okay, I get that.
Okay, but Ivysaur would be really unfortunate.
It would be.
We're not going to go there.
I know, but now I'm looking at all the characters I caught. Mm-hmm. Kevin, who are some of them? I know there's Pidgey.
Yeah, there's Pidgey, Pidgeotto, and Pidgeot.
He knows this way too quickly.
I know. Well, he's at that age. Like, you know.
What do you mean?
He's getting married.
Well, so have she's fun into while it too. You can.
Oh, she's into it too. Oh, yeah. Enjoy this.
Although I'm way better.
This is going to work out great.
I don't even know what the name of the things are I caught. What's the yellow elephant that looks like it's sitting down?
Oh, you got your Hypno.
No, that's not who I got.
So these repeat?
Drowsy.
Like,
yeah, Drowsy.
Yeah.
These repeat?
My maiden name.
Wasn't that an elf? No, a dwarf. From
a Duarte?
No. a dwarf from Snow White. Wasn't that
Sneezy, Sleepy.
Drowsy wasn't one?
Bitchy. And Doc. That's what they were. All right, we have to take a break because, you know, we're... see, this is what happens. The slap happiness.
She's feeling right in. Yeah, this happens around this time every day.
With me.
Right.
I mean, Bill has to hold it together every day for the last half hour of the show. I don't know what happens to me. All of a sudden, it's just silly time kicks in.
The wind changes.
Must be. All right, Andrea Darlis is live from the DNC, and we are going to talk to her after the news. And you know what? News is next. It's 720 WGN. Ah, the voice of Bill Leff. And I do miss him. I'm telling you, I love working with that guy. It just was very funny hearing that commercial. It's like, hi, I'm Bill Leff. I wear a baseball cap. Here's Laura.
I've never heard him on that a commercial before.
That was impressive.
Yeah.
Wow. He wanted to keep his presence known. So he recorded that. And I think he also had something else that he wanted to keep his name. What?
He doesn't even try to say Anna anymore. Now he just goes, blah, 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 blah. And it's Anna
it's like
Falafel.
A turkey.
It's Anna Falafel.
Although you doing Bill Leff saying your name was.
Blah, blah, blah.
That was
like he's right choking on something. Blah, blah, blah. See? Blah, blah, blah. He sounds like a Muppet character.
Well, he kind of is.
He.
I've lost a complete control of everything going on right here. So why don't we do some news? We're a little early. Veronica, are you ready to roll? Because I've got to stop the madness.
It's fine. There's plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah. All right. This
Save
is
us.
Day number three of the DNC. We'll talk to Andrea Darlis on the other side of this. But this is News Time, and it's sponsored by CME Group. Here's Veronica Carter. All right, we are going to go live to Philadelphia right now. Andrea Darlis is participating in Ladies Night at the Democratic National Convention.
Did you make that up?
Well, why do you and Anna DeVlantis only arrive on Wednesdays?
You know what? I don't know. That's a really good question.
Is it a cheaper flight for GN tonight? Radio, Andrea?
It is, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. I got here this morning, you know, right after the Cochran show. And as soon as I got here, I can only describe it as electric. I mean, it's like a party. I got off the plane. People are like dressed up like the Statue of Liberty and, you know, wearing I'm with her t-shirts. It's so much of a different vibe. You know, it seemed like in Cleveland, it was kind of business, very businessy. Mm-hmm. And here, I mean, literally, I walked in a hotel. I thought that, you know, the election it was over and Hillary had won. They were having a party right in the lobby. So it's crazy. It's crazy fun.
It's like the Comic-Con of politics, as I was explaining earlier this week, where, you know, all of a sudden the blinky hats come out and Uncle Sam was there. Was there the Statue of Liberty? I can't remember what you said, Andrea.
Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, it was the Statue of Liberty. Yeah, lady dressed up like a Statue of Liberty and then. You know, everyone's wearing red, white, and blue hats and scarves, and it really is. It's very festive.
Well, it has to be. It was a humongous night last night when the glass ceiling was broken.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It was completely, you know, I said, no matter what your politics are, it was such a
women empowering, you know, every speech, don't you think, you guys? I mean, yeah. We heard from the 9/11 survivors. We heard, you know, from the police detectives. And, oh, my gosh, the Mothers for the Movement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think, you know, I was watching it with friends. There wasn't a dry eye in the room.
You know, and I honestly am not saying any candidate is better over the other one. I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm leaning more towards the first woman president ever. So just listening to all these speeches at the Democratic National Convention really tugged at my heartstrings. Ivanka did a great job at the yes. RNC, mm-hmm. and there were a couple mm-hmm. other speakers, but they, it wasn't, I was making fun of people crying as Bernie Sanders was speaking, and then I found myself tearing up at several moments of the DNC.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And I think that's kind of, you know, it was kind of a mood, at least I sort of felt, of togetherness. You know, everybody kind of empathizing. You had a lot of victims' rights groups speaking and people who had been through tragedy, like I said, the 9/11 folks. And in fact, you girls will love this. I was, when I checked into my hotel just now, there was a man, he was an Ecuadorian journalist, and he was wearing a Black Lives Matter button and an I'm With Her button, and he was eating the ice cream, and I can't remember offhand, it's the famous ice cream place in Philadelphia. And he starts talking to me. I said, oh, are you with Black Lives Matter? He went, no, I'm a journalist. I'm from Ecuador. And he said, why do you speak Spanish? And I needed you. But I said, just a little bit, you know, hola que pasa. That's about as much as I know. And he was just so thrilled. He said, no, I support Hillary. I support Black Lives Matter. So it was just kind of a coming together moment. So yeah. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. Now, what's on tap for tonight? I know Bill Clinton did a wonderful thing last night and wowed everybody. Who's on tap for tonight?
Well, we have Michael Bloomberg tonight, who's going to give his endorsement to Hillary, which will be a big deal.
Yeah.
We are going to have Joe Biden, I think Joe Biden's always a good speaker.
Mm-hmm. I love him.
President Obama. Yeah, I do too, Wendy. Yeah. I do too.
And he shoots from the hip, too, you know. Yeah. Oh, and the president who's going to have to follow his wife. Boy, that's a tough one. Because Michelle Obama was spectacular.
She was.
She was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I like them. And, you know, I believe all politicians lie. I mean, I'm sorry. And it's unfortunate that, you know, Hillary, all that's ever mentioned with her is liar and email. There's much more to it than that with her, but I don't believe in any of them. I really don't. I mean,
you have to take them with a grain of salt, all of them.
Yeah, but we have to stay connected and be one unit. I mean, whoever wins, I was not really crazy about George W., but he was our president, and you know what? I respected that.
You know, that's a really good point. I really hope, you know, once this is over, we all, I guess, you know, as human beings and Americans, have to get behind the president of the United States. That's why I think I liked last night's speeches so much, because it was real people. You know, it was Anastasia, you know, the disabled rights advocate. It was, you know, it was just people speaking from the heart, just telling their stories. And I know it's political. I know that's the goal to tug on your heartstrings, but it worked, I think.
And we do have to stand together. And again, I am fearful that whoever wins, the opponents of that winner are going to just dismiss the fact, oh, you know, Hillary won. Well, she's a liar. I'm not going to listen to her. I don't care about her. Oh, Trump won. He's crazy. I'm not going to support him. We have to come together at some point in time, don't we?
Right.
I think we do, too. And, you know, I think a lot, you know, when this convention started Monday and we saw the Bernie Sanders speakers and people chanting Bernie, I really thought, wow, they're going to get off on a wrong foot. They want to unify.
Right.
And then you have your own party kind of split down the middle, which is what happened with the Republican Party, I thought, too, last week with Cruz. But not to say that Bernie pulled a Cruz, because I don't think he did.
No.
But you saw kind of dissipate a little bit last night, don't you guys think?
Yes, but I also think that it's all very calculated. You know, they gave him Monday to throw the fit and to expose their ideas and to support Bernie Sanders, because it has been quite a movement. And then he circled back and said, you know, we're with her. Because that's what they wanted to do. They didn't want to be divisive. And another thing I was going to say, it's interesting. Well, we like the Obamas, so we find every speech wonderful.
Right.
But if you're listening to another radio station where they favor the Republicans, they probably would say the opposite.
Well, because they blame him for everything. Right. But like the job that he's done in office or not, he just seems like a really cool, smooth over everything dude, and his wife's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And you know what, too? I think we've seen such a cool side of Michelle Obama, too. I mean, you're right, both of you. Put all your politics aside. They're good parents. They have a good marriage, or so we think. You know, and they're all about their girls. That was another reason. Yeah. You know, Michelle Obama, she really didn't get too political. She talked about her daughters mm-hmm. and playing on the White House lawn. I mean, that's what I like. You know,
it was
we're so used to covering mud.
Right, Andrea. And I think it was so well written yeah. because it not only tugged at your heartstrings, she choked up. She talked about being African-American and the reality right. of where she is now and how she got there. But then she also, you know, took some hits at Trump and at the opposition in a subtle way, but in a, you know, I don't know if to say roundabout, but she made her points very clear. There was a little bit of everything in that speech. So what are we hoping the president does for Hillary Clinton? What are they expecting him to say?
You know, they're expecting him to say, you know, he's going to talk a little bit about, I'm sure, himself and his presidency, you know, because it's kind of his swan song, too. It's the last convention. He's done in November, well, theoretically January. But I think he's really going to tout her. Early indications are that he's going to say she is more prepared for the job, obviously, than Trump, but probably than almost any presidential candidate. I mean, she's been a senator. She's been a community activist. You know, say what you want about Hillary Clinton, but she has been a political activist since she's 16 years old.
Which was her point when she ran against Obama 8 years ago, that he had no experience, yeah. remember? That's ironic right. that today he's going to say she has even more experience than me, back when I ran.
I know. Right. Now that we're friends again.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Now that we're all on the same page. But you know what? To that point, too, I thought Madeleine Albright did a really cool job last night, too, talking about the international politics. And, you know, you need someone who's not going to put up, now I'm going to say this, put up walls, but I mean, you know, not literally. You know, you need someone who's going to work with others and not, you know, for the betterment of the country. That's why I kind of enjoyed Madeleine Albright's speech last night, too. She's a little firecracker.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she is. Absolutely. All right. Finally here, Andrea, I have to ask you, history was yes. made and the first woman to run for president was nominated last night. Why isn't there more hoopla? Is it just because Hillary and her name has been around? We're so familiar with her. It's not like some outsider just coming in and, oh, my God, the angels are singing. It's the first woman president. It's like she's been around. Unfortunately, I feel like we've taken her for granted. This is a huge accomplishment.
Oh, absolutely. It's huge. In fact, there was an article, I want to say it was online on the Tribune, and they were talking about all of the female leaders across the country, like Angela Merkel, and mm-hmm. They went back as far as Imelda Marcos, and they were talking about different heads, female heads of state.
Sarah Palin, of ministers. Course.
Yeah. I didn't see her in there, Wendy. but yeah, there should, I mean, this is a big deal. This is history. You know, it's a moment. It's a female moment. It's a great moment for the country.
But she's being
history.
Robbed of it, I think.
I don't know if it was.
You think so?
Yeah. I don't know if it was in the morning show or with you guys during the first 2 hours, Wendy. Somebody said, you know, we've been so fixated on the Bernie situation and the protesting, and what is he going to concede? Is he going to support her? Is he going to pull a Cruz? What is he going to do? And then when he didn't, then everyone said, oh, wait a minute, wait, we got to mark this moment in history. This was a really big deal. Plus, we're coming from last week where everyone wanted her in jail.
Oh,
and
I know.
All the flaws were pointed
right.
out.
First Lady Prez.
There you go. And did you guys hear Meryl Streep's speech last night? I thought that was so good.
Yeah.
I did not.
I saw quotes from it. I didn't see it. Yeah.
So for those of us who didn't see it. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Andrea. For those of us who didn't see it.
No, they were talking about, she was talking about the first soldier, the first woman who fought in the Civil War, and she wanted to fight for her country so bad that she cut her hair and put on the soldier, the uniform rather, to look like a guy and fought in the Revolutionary War and got shot and didn't want anybody to find out her secret. So she basically took a knife, cut out the bullet, and sewed herself back up and went back into battle. So she was kind of highlighting some of those female firsts, which I just thought were fascinating.
You know, I was thinking, Andrea, that my daughter picked a hero for a second grade, you know, project, and it was Susan B. Anthony. And it was interesting. Uh-huh. And she, you know, she became like a suffragist. Amelia was very aware of the women's movement and why were they treated this way. And because in her 8-year-old mind, she can do anything, right? So I was watching this, and I watch it the morning after because I'm in bed early, and I was listening to Michelle Obama, and then I was watching the moment with all the presidents, right? That montage they had, and then they showed Hillary Clinton. I'm like, I'm going to watch this with her tonight because this is a moment in history where it will be obvious for her that they can tell her she doesn't have the talent, she doesn't have the skills, but they can't tell her she cannot do it because she's a girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's the message that this is going to show all our girls, of conservative parents, of liberal parents, of whoever, that in this country, that is not an obstacle anymore. Well, we hope, right?
Yeah, well, we don't know. But even just to make history, to be the first woman nominated to be president, history's been broken already. It's been made, rather.
And she's also an example, and Michelle Obama pointed out that she didn't give up when she lost and she wasn't nominated last time, and Barack Obama won the nomination. She became, Secretary of State, and she tried again. And it's also a lesson in, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again.
Exactly. Don't give up on your dreams.
Try again. Exactly. And to make it come full circle, our shuttle, I just hopped on the shuttle to go over to Wells Fargo Arena, and we just stopped in front of Betsy Ross's house.
Wow.
In Philadelphia.
I have goosebumps.
It's just that Philadelphia is the cradle of a country, too. So what a great place to be at.
And by the way, people who are here or who are coming here, there's a great women's suffragette, women's voting exhibit that's going on at the Liberty Bell, too. So that's kind of neat, too, to tie in.
Wow, you're doing a great job with this, Andrea, and it's got to be pretty exciting for you to go to these conventions.
It is. You know, it really is. It's the first two conventions that I've heard inside and being, so it's very cool. Yeah, I'm having a really good time.
All right, we look forward to hearing from you again. Thank you and Godspeed.
Thank you. Be safe.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Wendy. Take care, girls.
Andrea Darlis, and of course, Ro Khan is out there as well. So after 3 o'clock, we will find out what's going on in his point of view. And it is ladies' night, so Anna DeVlantes has arrived in Philadelphia as well. Something about Women Wednesdays. I don't know what it is. All right, Bill Leff is off for the rest of the week. Anna Balaval is in for him. We're going to take a quick break, and we've got a little bit more show up our sleeves somewhere. Anna Balaval is with me today. How does Bill say her name, Kevin? Because Bill is on vacation. One more time.
He doesn't even try.
Our friend Dean Richards is on the phone.
Says it perfectly.
Yeah, you can say it right, huh, Dean?
Anna Maria Balaval.
Toma. Muy bien. Hi, Dean.
Hi, sweetie. How are you? Hi, sweeties.
Hi, sweeties.
Thank you for including me. I know you just want to forget I was here. Go ahead and talk to Anna Balaval.
I'm enjoying the conversation very much.
Thank you.
Well, Dean is going to be sitting in for Bill Leff on Friday afternoon, I believe. Is that the day you're coming
in?
Takes all these guest hosts to fill the squeaky shoes of a Bill Leff, I'll tell you
and
that.
And of you, too. You had like a plethora of people coming in for you.
Well, good.
Dean,
I'm completely
out of
show.
So what do you want, Dean? What do you want?
I called to say hello to you and to tell you that you're talking about the sense of history that was made when Hillary Clinton's name was officially put into nomination. I totally sensed a big deal with that. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something? Anna will appreciate this because she knows I'm a big baby. I actually got emotional.
That's awesome.
I was listening to the roll call and everything. I was driving. I just came back from the airport, and I'm in the car in terrible traffic, just like I am now. And when the nomination became official, I found myself emotional. Like, how many times do we get to be a witness to a bona fide moment in history? Like a profound moment in history. Usually it's just tragedy when that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, the Challenger explosion, something where, you know, you witnessed. But this was something, you know, if you can put your politics aside, it's a rather profound moment that that I found myself really emotional by what was happening. And the second time that I got emotional was just now, Anna, when you were saying what you think this means to your daughter, Amelia. Yeah. And, you know, that, like, really put another layer on it. We've heard all the politicians. We heard Hillary Clinton last night saying, you know, if you're a little girl, this could happen to you too.
Yeah.
But here's a little girl that I know who, you know, is a remarkable young woman. And if she and other little girls and young women can be moved by what happened the other day, America's better because of that. You know, it's telling little girls you can truly be anything, and it's more than just talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know her well, and she says to anybody who meets her that she wants to be the first woman to host The Tonight Show.
Oh, good.
That's
for
what
her.
She wants to do, right?
Right.
She's written to Jimmy Fallon, when are you going to retire? When you retire, no offense, I love you, I want your job. And she's very focused. She talks to my friends that are comedians and are writers to find out what she can do. And I really hope that she's not, because I hope we break that glass ceiling sooner than my daughter. But I do hope that she gets to that level that has been unreachable all the way up to 2016. And I think that's why she was so marked by Susan B. Anthony's story, where, you know, she said, Mama, she was cross-eyed because she didn't have a light to read because her father thought girls shouldn't read, and her teacher never called on her to answer math problems because girls couldn't solve math problems. And she's 8 years old.
Well,
and
so she doesn't understand anything about how that could have possibly been true.
How could that possibly, when she knows that she's a kick butt girl,
yeah,
because she's a kick butt human being. So when I saw that, I'm like, this is perfect for all our little girls, all of them.
Right.
And for Dean, evidently, because you must be PMSing because you're getting all weepy.
I have got to eat some chocolate right now. I'm going to go get a manicure.
Yeah. Dean, I know what you mean. I just thought, like, it wasn't as big of a deal as I felt it should have been. I feel like Hillary's getting robbed because you said if you can put your politics aside, and unfortunately I feel people can't put their politics aside for this historic moment.
But do you think they could have when it was the first African-American nominee? No, I'm sorry, the first African-American president. Do you think the other side, the people who opposed him, marked that moment?
8 years later, people still have a problem with that.
They blame Obama for everything, including your PMS.
Yeah. That's why you're crying so much.
But but what that meant, I'll never forget African-American friends telling me how moving that was.
Yeah.
Because that never seemed like anything could possibly ever happen. And we saw stories, and I have friends whose grandmothers and great-grandmothers in some cases got to see Barack Obama become president, something that they could never have imagined in a million years. And if boys and girls, young men and young women can be motivated to try to make something better because they see someone who looks like them, who talks like them, who is, you know, is more like them, doing something remarkable, that person's going to reach a little further. It's going to try a little harder. It's going to, you know, dream the impossible dream.
Oh, goodness.
Here we go.
show tunes all of a sudden.
I'm going to try to get all this out of my system by Friday.
Before you get to Nordstrom, what it was.
Right. That's right. I have to stop at Lane Bryant's before.
Lane Bryant's with a plural, too. Is he from Chicago or what? The Lane Bryant's.
Well, this country is a pretty great country already. So congratulations to all. And to you, Dean. And we'll see you tomorrow morning on TV. And I can't wait to work with you Friday afternoon.
What do we have planned for then? Do we have?
Oh, come on. We barely know what we have tomorrow.
Nothing at the moment. The first half of the show's booked. So any ideas would be greatly appreciated.
All right. Freeform then. tomorrow morning, I'm going to be out at Lollapalooza, by the way.
Your favorite. Your favorite assignment
of the year. It's my favorite day of the year. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll be listening. We got to go because Rokan's going to be live from the DNC in a moment. Yeah, I know.
To dream the impossible.
All right.
Dream.
Have some chocolate, Dean. We love you.
I love you guys.
Bye.
That's just one big happy family. Can't Look America be one big happy family?
It should.
We'll work on
it
that.
It will.
Annabelle Laval sitting in for Bill. Left.
Oh, now he gets it. Now.
Great
now.
Timing, Kevin.
Wow.
Thank you so much for sitting in. I really appreciate it. You'll be back tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, ma'am, at 1 o'clock.
All right, and we'll say hello to Rokan and Anna DeVlantes after this, 720 WGN.